United Nations is welcoming the 5 billionth person alive in the world.
The White House today denies reports the U.S. sent weapons-related equipment to Iran as late as last month. The recent scandal at the PTL ministry are taking a toll on the credibility.
Kim Baker resigned as head of the PTL club.
I can't trust in a moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
Hey, good morning, and welcome to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. It is 8 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock here on the East Coast, and I hope you're having a good morning today. And the number is 347-945-5229. I want to talk a little bit before I get into anything that's going on in the world today. Yesterday, when I left out of here, I was privileged and honored to go to the installation services of the ninth president of Youngstown State University. And because of my relationship with their family, the new president's family, I had never gone, I never paid attention to the installation services of any president prior to that. So I did like everybody else. I saw it and said, okay, Cochran, Dunn, Cynthia, Anderson. It's like, okay, that's good, but I never actually went to an installation service and ceremony. And it was very, very nice. It was very interesting. The new president of Youngstown State University is the former Youngstown State University head football coach and the former Ohio State head football coach, Jim Tressel, for those of you who do not know because you do not live here. And it was very to watch how all of the persons in the audience that actually had their doctorates, they came in with their robes on and with certain hats. It was very, very enlightening, the swearing in. But I will say this, Governor Kasich was there, and he is the keynote speaker for the event, and he did a very, very good job talking about the importance of education and academia. It was very, very good. And then also President Tressel got up and he spoke, and he talked about the great successes that we have here in the Valley. And yes, because we know we have a long way to go, we need to also understand that we also have come a long way. And it is important for us to have economic development, have education, and to celebrate our successes one at a time. I believe Coach Tressel is going to be a team builder. I believe that he is going to work on making sure that we begin to work as a cohesive unit. I find him to be a unifier and not a divider. He's proven to be good at that. There are naysayers out there to say that he should not be there because he is not in academia, or should I say he isn't, teaching, But he is a businessman, and he understands the institution of higher education. And I will say this to a lot of you. A lot of people want to put people into a box based upon what you think their background is. And you have no idea what a person's background is until you actually see them execute what they actually know. And sometimes you can know more and not be in your field of this, your disciplined field that you took in school and come out better for it because you see things differently. And I will say that we have to begin to look at things differently, look outside of the box, not only in our community here in the Northeast Ohio in Youngstown, but outside. We need to understand that we have something special here in America, and we're going to have to cultivate it and work at it, because if we do not, we lose. And if you want to see what losing looks like, take a glance and a glimpse of what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri. When you take away a person's hope, and I've been getting into it, and those of you who know me and who are my Facebook friends want to say thank you, and I appreciate being friends with you on Facebook. But I want you to know, those of you who know me, I post a lot of articles, I post a lot of clips, I post a lot of motivational stuff, I post a lot of things that I read. Whether I agree or disagree, I may post something because I want to go back and read it. But I do a lot of posting on a lot of stuff. And so I get out there and I post it, and it's like, okay, this is it. And then I don't do a lot of back and forth with people when they start making their comments. I don't do a whole lot of commenting inside of that. I don't have time for it. I wish I did, but I don't. And so I don't get out there and start. And if you say, you know, well, so and so, and you're commenting on this post, I don't too much answer. I read them sometimes and I take a glance at them, but I don't, because I just don't have that kind of time to be writing stuff back. Now, Jeff, he banters back and forth on the comments. I don't have time for that. So, but this morning I'm watching comments from conservative friends of mine who are friends of mine on Facebook about what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri. And they're saying things, and they're putting people into classes, and they're calling. I saw a guy on television call a man a hoodlum this morning. You know, I saw them talk about they're swarming. There's a lot of adjectives to actually describe what's going on here. But we need to carefully craft our words on what we call people, because at the end of the day, whether you like it or not, they may act like a thug, but that doesn't make them one. Just because I call you something doesn't make that who you are. And if you're acting like something, doesn't that mean that that's what you are also? And what I see is going on is people don't know how to build bridges and gaps. And I'm looking at this chaos going on in Missouri, and they are acting many of them are acting in a way that is not what I could actually say is a good thing. But when I take off my lenses and really understand that when you put people in despair, when you take away their hope, then you get what you see, and they don't see any way out of it. There was conversation, they were talking about first-class citizens and second-class citizens, and they're not first-class citizens. Well, the problem that you see is because we never told the people that you see looting and rioting that they were first-class citizens, and there is no class system in America. But because we have elitists and we have people who make people feel as though they are better than other people, and that's not based on just race, that's just based on people that we know as you go down the street. They just do that. They act like that they are the quintessential, there's nothing better than me. And actually, and if you want to know the truth of it, most of them have really raggedy lives. But they make people feel as though they're not worthy to be equal with them. And equality is not how much you have or what you glean and what's going on. Equalization is equal respect. And if you don't have respect for yourself, it's hard for you to have respect for others. But when you're trying to glean respect, you have to be taught respect. And you have to look at what's going on there. When you don't have a life of productivity, because productivity gives you self-encouragement, which gives you self-respect. And when you don't have that, you don't have anything. And so you have people out there, including the young man Brown, Michael Brown, who died. I mean, you got to understand where he came out of, and he didn't come out of an Ivy League college. He graduated from school, but what kind of school did he graduate from? You know, was it a public school? Was it good? You know, were they teaching him world history? Were they teaching him that he could become anything, that he could go anywhere, he could make anything happen? Was that what they were doing, or were they just they put him on the same bus, they send him home on the same bus, and nobody really cares about what's really going on? And so, and so when you see what's going on here, and they're trying to stop it, and I'm so concerned, because the more and more I hear about what's going on there in Missouri, it looks like this may come down to a justifiable shooting, which means the officer actually discharged his arm, and it was justified. And people are going to be upset because he actually shot, you know, six times, seven times. But you don't get into trouble for how many times you shoot like that. And that's going to cause a problem. And because of the lack of the education and because of the lack of the infrastructure there, because of the lack of involvement, we are seeing this manifest in a unbelievable way. And then I only heard clips because, as I said earlier, I was at the installation of President Trussell yesterday, and I was watching. I was you know, I didn't see the President Obama's comments, and I know he's really caught between a rock and a hard place. I know he is, and I understand that he is, because it's tough. But you got to grow some kahunas. You got to have some kahunas. It's important. If you go, I mean, I've got, from what I'm listening and reading about President Obama right now in this state of his administration, he's losing all steam. So he's really to the place where, you know, if I could walk away from the job and go find another one now, I would. But since I can't, I'll just kick it and just let it go on autopilot. And we those of us who disagree with his policy, we said that he's been there all the time. But that's something different. But this is, we have to really understand that his comments, they were crafted very, very carefully, because he didn't want to get into another Louis Gates scenario. But he's going to send Eric Holder out there. But to talk to them, we have to realize that the majority of the people that were there in that city, I'm quite sure if you pull the polls from that city, they overwhelmingly supported the President of the United States of America. They voted for him. I would say that he probably had a 70% margin victory in that city of Missouri. I don't know if President Obama won Missouri or lost Missouri, but I do know that he had probably a 70%, and I need to look that up, that he had probably a 70% win in that area. And when I say this, when I look at all of the brain trust that we have across this country, there should be a way, with all the technology, to be able to have a communication source with all these people. And when, as the young man was saying this morning, we're angry, we're mad, we're going to get, what are you angry about? You're not angry because of this, because if you were angry because of murder and because of what was going on, then you would be angry when you have another homicide down the street where a black kid kills another black kid. You're mad because of the system has failed you. And the reason why the system has failed you is because you don't have the education to engage in it to make you feel as though you are a first-class citizen. And that's a problem. That is an issue. And until we actually take a step back and look at what's going on here, analyze it, and do something about it, we will have this kind of things happen all over our country. Because as things get different and change, and as you have to have more and more education to make it, you're going to see more despair. And you can't, and the dollar has no value. what dollar buys you less and less. And so all these little entitlement programs and people not being able to engage in the process and having no control over their life, all we're going to do is continue this fight. And the question is, are we going to be responsible for it, or are we going to do something about it? Because eventually, it's not just going to be black people fussing about this in the streets. It's going to be all people fussing about something in the streets because they're all going to fall in despair. Because we forgot to tell them that they were first-class citizens, that they could become something, they could get an education, and they could move out of where they are and go where they want to go. And you may never make it to a millionaire, but money doesn't buy you happiness. Good morning, Eric. How are you?
Good morning, Tracy. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm good.
Good. Now, you mentioned education, Tracy. Now, I find it pretty ironic that they're canceling the school. Now, I don't think that's a very good idea. I mean, you got to get them kids in school, get their mind off
they
of this.
Can't.
But I don't know what they're thinking down there.
Let me tell you this. Let me tell you just how asinine this is. We have a cell phone. We have tablets. We have computers. We got a whole lot of toys. And things have changed so drastically that you can walk down the street, talk on the phone, take a picture, send it to somebody all the way across the globe, and go back to texting and tweeting and doing whatever you want to do, listening to your music with no cords. And as a matter of fact, if you go on Google location, they will tell you where you've been for the last 17 days, every track you took with that phone. But we haven't changed the clock calendar for education because we're still working on a agricultural calendar like our kids are out there behind the plow in the summertime.
Exactly. It makes no sense.
Really? Right now, we know that all children don't enter the classroom at age six on the same level, but we throw them all in the same room, and we expect for them to be kept the same way. You got 25 kids in the same room all over the place, and you expect for them to be productive. Does that make sense?
Not at all.
And you wonder why the system is failing. And just because in suburban areas you see what they are, they're somewhat doing better, it's because the despair of their areas has not come to them yet. No, they shouldn't cancel school, but you can't send them out there right now because people in the street are crazy.
And last night, Patricia, it was I couldn't believe what I was seeing last night. It's like the media was actually camped out. Like, this is like some kind of TV show.
It is. Shock and awe. It is. It makes ratings. People watch it.
I mean,
and then the infrastructure of that city, they are so – this is what happens when you allow people to get in office who don't care and don't have a clue. You can tell. You see it.
I mean,
you see the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah. You had Fox News, you had MSNBC, you had CNN all lined up next to each other.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's news. It's news. And there are some people who are going to make money off of this eventually. That black guy who is, I guess he's the police, he's a deputy police chief, or he's one of the officers there who's speaking now because they're not letting the sheriff speak no more. He's done. The police chief, he's in his office. He can't come out no more.
Yeah, that's that Johnson guy?
Yeah, him. He's going to be mayor next. Watch. You watch.
I didn't think about that. He's probably going to be mayor.
Absolutely. And they tell me, and I need to pull up their voting abstract. They tell me this is a very, very strong Democrat area in Missouri. Strong Democrat. They got their back. It shows you what happens when you destroy the system.
Yeah, and why is it, if they had their back, then why has it been this bad for this long?
Because they lull them to sleep and mobilize them when they want to. Treat them as they choose. They go to school and don't learn. They go to work and don't earn money. They come home and don't find love. And you wonder why their life is so miserable. I'll be right back. Let me take my break. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. I'll be right back.
Unique, individualized, and promoting a healthy, active lifestyle. Fit Family on Route 46 in Austin Town designs a personal exercise program just for you with your own personal trainer. Each client at Fit Family in Austin Town receives their own certified personal trainer with their membership. And at Fit Family, we listen to you and design a fitness program to the type of fitness you're looking for with all the equipment you need for strength training, cardio, Pilates, and more. We also offer classes in Zumba, yoga, kickboxing, step, 5K training, line dancing, silver sneaker, and real rider cycling. Fit Family is open Monday through Saturday with hours that fit your schedule. Find out more about Fit Family in Austintown. Call 330-793-4466. That's 330-793-4466. Visit us on the web at fitfamily1.com. That's fitfamily1.com.
Your car will look brand new after a professional cleaning at Kingly Hand Wash and Wax. All work is done by hand, which protects the paint, leaves no water spots. You won't believe how good it looks. Walk-ins are always welcome, or book an appointment for a full detailing. Thursday is Ladies' Day. Get an additional service free with any regular wash. Kingly offers pickup and drop-off service. They'll take you to work, an appointment, and pick you up when your car is ready. If it's not Kingly, it's not clean. Kingly Hand Wash and Wax.
Let's talk for a moment about a great doctor. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. And read the testimonials at AIWHealth.com. I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one. All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit AIWHealth.com.
Here at Pet Spa Salon on Western Reserve Road, we offer many services to our customers' pets, including bathing, grooming, nail trimming, and we even brush, bathe, and trim cats. Pet Spa Salon uses only all natural products. With 35 years' experience in the business, our expert staff works slowly and gently to put even the most fidgety pets at ease. Come into Pet Spa Salon and get your fur baby looking and feeling great. Open Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. 1122 Western Reserve Road. Call for an appointment.
If it comes up, it goes out. Weekdays from 9 to noon, listen to Tracy and Friends, a local talk show that covers the valley issues that matter to you, plus global topics and news of the day. Tracy and Friends on News Talk 600 WSOM. We're back with Tracy and Friends on News Talk 600 WSOM. 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. Online at TracyandFriends.com or 600WSOM.com.
And it seems nobody's interested in learning. teacher. Segregation, determination, demonstration, integration, activation, diminution. Evolution, revolution, gun control, sound of soul. Shooting rockets to the moon, kids going after soon. Politicians say more taxes will solve everything.
And the band played on.
Hey, we're back. I'm back. What? Don't come in here and make a noise. Hey, I'm back. You listen to the Tracy and Friends here on WSLM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. What do you mean, what's wrong? Your mic's not on. Your mic's not on. I can't hear you.
It should be on.
There you are.
Oh, you cut me off.
Okay. There's a reason for that. Do you know there's a ball of confusion going on?
No.
Hey.
It's done. It's already settled.
Don't start. It's not settled.
It's over.
No, it's not.
Listen.
No.
Listen.
No.
Don't you see all little kids still coming across the border? They haven't stopped coming across the border because this guy got shot.
Yes.
They're still
coming. Let me see it this way. And Eric, your mic is up. Let me say it this way. I really want you to understand this. I will concede. I believe you are right. That they are working on the extinction and the nullifying of the black community.
Yeah.
Okay. I believe that. And when I say that, it's not about. I want to say this, and I'm probably going to get beaten up.
Yeah.
It's really not about black.
Mm-mm.
So I really want people to understand. This is not about color. It's not about race. It appears to be racial, and what's going on in Missouri has a racial overtone to it.
Yeah.
But it's really not about the color of your skin in 2014.
What?
Just, huh?
No, I'm with you. I'm with you.
So it's not. But I am, you know, call me Jesse Jackson in a dress.
Daniel Stars. In the scars. Or
call,
scars
call,
in the stars.
Now, let's see it, Jess.
I am, too.
Don't be mocking Jesse. That's my dude. Listen here. Call me Jesse Jackson Jr., the third. I ain't going to jail.
You ain't going to jail.
Call me Jesse Jackson, the girl. Yeah, Jesse's the name, girl. Call me Jesse. Okay, listen to this. Let me say, look at me. Look at me when I'm talking to you.
No, I can't do it because you're so upset, but go ahead.
I want you to look at me when I'm talking to you. Look at this. Keep hope alive.
Keep hope alive.
If you...
I am somebody.
No. It's bigger than I am somebody because he gave a lot of cliches, but we didn't put any action behind the cliches. They got a lot of money, but he didn't take the money and invest it in the people because I'm finding out there is no such thing as giving me money and me not investing it back in people and thinking you're going to get something different.
Oh, yeah.
And what happens is people give money, and I'm tired of folks giving money to things that they think they're going to try to make a change, and now they then took the money and run, and the money never got to the people it was supposed to get to.
Never.
But there's hope, Jeff.
Keep hope alive.
There's hope. I mean, we can stop the extinction. We can stop the train.
Mm-hmm.
We can. But it's going to take hard work. It's going to take dedication. It's going to take unity. It's going to take love. And we got to go back to God, whether you like it or not.
What the world needs now
is love.
Sweet love.
Donna Ross, hold on, Jeff. Hold on. I'll find it. I'm serious, Jeff. We really do.
Yeah.
I mean, You have no idea. It can work.
Me and Alabama solved this.
I don't
want to
hear you.
Day.
No, I don't want to hear about you in Alabama. I don't want to hear about you in Alabama.
Over some wonderful food.
Hey, wait a minute. You come back here grinning and
oh,
all.
Oh, man, I had fun. I had a ball.
Did I ask you how was your trip?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
I thought this
no,
was stuck in there
no,
in the middle.
No, I didn't. Did I say, Jeff, how was your trip to Atlanta? No, I did not. Did I say, what was it like meeting, you know, Alabama? I didn't ask. I didn't
Alabama
ask you any of that.
Cool.
Did you see what I posted? Y'all started,
no.
Y'all started a gang down there.
No.
Y'all was throwing signs. Hold on.
That was Montgomery.
506, good morning.
Good morning. It's Ben. How are you guys doing?
What's up, man?
Good morning, Ben.
Yeah, you know what? Did I hear this right? Did Jeff say that Mexican is the new black?
Yes, I did.
I didn't know it was a fashion show you guys were having today, but
yes.
Just, yeah, but you know, honestly, I got to be honest. I looking into this incident. I want to call it in St. Louis. I don't know what happened between the cop and this gentleman to get him shot. If I was a store owner, I would have shot him right then and there. That's all I'm going to say. Come into my place,
well, we understand,
try to steal from me.
Ben,
I'm going to shoot
Ben.
You. I'm going to shoot
Ben,
you before
Ben,
I try to lock
Ben,
the door.
Ben, listen. The problem is
yeah.
It had nothing to do with him
Race
jaywalking.
Color. I know that.
No. It had nothing. No. Listen. Him jaywalking and getting shot. Absolutely
yeah.
Nothing to do with the cop stopping him. He didn't even know that.
When he stopped him,
he had no clue.
I've got no doubt. I've said I've got no idea what happened between him and the cop. You know?
I mean,
but
I mean you might
you gotta, try that.
But you
I might
have
give
shot
you a
him.
Lead injection.
But let me, I mean, you don't shoot all your shoplifters, because I shoplift in your store all the time.
I'm coming to steal one of my art pieces, man. and I'm going to taunt you from the sidewalk. And when you shoot me,
you're gonna talk
my wife is going to sue you.
Because I'm going to turn my back.
And
you won't,
yeah,
be, a, you won't be a threat.
There were no entrance. That's another thing. His friend had to have lied because there were no shots in his back. But both
Ben,
both,
you're changing the subject.
He said that. Yeah, well,
Ben,
no, I
you're
am.
Changing the subject. Don't change
well,
the subject.
I won't
listen,
change the subject.
Ben,
like I said.
Don't change the subject. He is, listen. The young man is dead. 6 shots went into his body.
Mm-hmm. At least.
Right.
The problem is, and this is what I said earlier, you may have missed it. More than likely, this is going to come down to a justifiable shoot. Because
mm-hmm.
the way things look right now, and they have witnesses, because even the first statement and the ones that came from the parents and what started all this came from his friends. It came from people that knew him.
That were shoplifting with him in the store.
I ain't got nothing to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about there was boys.
Mm-hmm.
All the evidence right now and how it's coming down is this going to be a justifiable shoot because the boy sucker punched the cop, tried to take his gun from him and clowned him and charged him. So that's what it looks like. And I'm not making a case for any the police officer and no for the young man. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But the problem is, but Ben, see, the problem is not about the young man shoplifting, him jaywalking, and or getting shot. I'm past that. My problem is them burning up their own city, looting all over the place, and having no organized effort to change anything.
Nope.
But folks die every day. I'm like Hillary Clinton. I didn't become liberal today. I'm like Hillary Clinton. What good is it now? Or what difference
does
it
matter?
It don't
we
make no
had
difference
somebody
today.
Killed here. We had somebody. We had a young black teen killed here in Youngstown over the weekend. Nobody said anything.
And like I said, they dying all over the place. So what?
Yeah.
What difference does it make? The question is, the reason why they're dying and they're dying the way they are is because of a systemic problem that nobody wants to address.
Nope.
The problem is not them dying. People gonna drop dead. The problem is there is a systemic problem that if they want to change some things, they can. Because right now, people are actually protesting out of frustration. They're tired.
They're not tired.
They are.
No, they are. Let me tell you. I listened. I was a captive audience because I was driving. And I listened to coverage on this from MSNBC, CNN, and Fox. And let me tell you, This is a freaking circus.
Yeah. I know that.
All of this is, yeah.
There was a woman last night waving a box of Swisher Sweet cigars, smoking a blunt.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with that?
Well, the ignorance of what's going on is what's wrong with that. That's the thing.
But that's what I said, Jeff. Listen, when you are mindless, when you are ignorant, you become frustrated. We've got to concede to that. These people, when you know nothing and you're stuck in a box and you're trying to get out the box, you become very, very frustrated when you don't know how to build a ladder to get out the box and you have all the tools in front of you.
What's this is how you know that. That they're almost that. You know how bees get. Remember when we used to go to the amusement park here called Idor Park?
Yeah.
And at the in September when the park was getting ready to close, that the bees would be flying around going crazy because they knew wintertime was coming.
Yeah.
And they knew they were going to die, but they didn't know when. But they were going for the gusto.
And that's what they are now.
This is what's happening in Ferguson. They're going for the gusto, and they're not going to make it because wintertime is
but
here.
And that's what I'm saying. It comes
mm-hmm.
from frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is we have not changed the paradigm.
They don't want
so
the
Ben,
paradigm
I
change.
Mean, Ben, you know, people robbing a store, people going to steal. They've been stealing since Jesus was around. They're going to steal.
Well,
people going to get
there's
killed.
There's no doubt about it. Yeah,
so,
no
but
doubt
the problem,
about it.
The
but,
problem
but
is
have to
that we
at
have.
I'm trying to give you a white American standpoint, all right? Plenty of young black lives being wasted, okay? And because they're being wasted by their own other black teams, nobody says a word.
But you're missing the point.
So why should
That's
we care
trying.
About?
But yeah. you don't care anyhow. That's the point. That's the point. And the point is black people don't realize white people don't care no more.
No, it's not
that's
that
the point.
We don't care. It looks like you don't care.
No,
so why should
no,
we
you
care?
Don't. No, because white people have been conditioned to believe that anyone lower than them is a second-class citizen. And they've made black people feel that way for so long, they believe it. And they don't
well,
believe that they
America,
have to think
all men are created equal.
But
no.
not if you're black.
Not if you're black.
Okay.
See.
Now, I understand that. But what I am saying, what you have to understand, okay, is if you don't care, and it seems as if you do not.
But because let me say it this way.
Mm-hmm.
When we try to care,
and you know I'm
you
just
kill
being
us.
Devil's advocate now.
When we try to care, you kill us. You understand that, right? When we try to get out, and let me say this, and this is something that I was talking to my mom about, and so please, y'all, don't hurt me. Don't kill me. And Jeff, go start my car.
You better put some pennies on that hood, girl.
I want you guys to understand this. White America, they treat everybody like this. It's not that they don't want when you engage in white America, you think that they're just like you. That they're caring, compassionate, and they want to share their chicken sandwich with the world. And we seem to think that the reason why they don't want us to be in business is because of the color of our skin. You think the reason why they don't want to set aside is the color of our skin. You think the reason why they don't want us to be in the marketplace with them is the color of our skin. And I'm talking about the millennialists and beyond. I'm talking about the ending of the baby boomer. I want you to clarify this. Before, when we had Jim Crow, it was based on race, but it's still based on money. Now that we no longer have Jim Crow and there has been integration, it's all based on money. And they don't like to share because they don't share with their children. They don't share with their families. They don't share with their siblings.
And when you're saying they, you can't.
I'm not saying all.
Okay.
I'm not saying all. I don't want people to think that I'm painting all white America with the same brush. But when you look at what people do, people don't want to when people die, they don't want to share the estate of their parents with their brothers and sisters.
Right.
So what makes you think they want to share it with you?
Well, I think because the economic model has to change. It's not about white money, not about black money. It's about money being green.
But no one's taught me how to engage in commerce.
That may be the point. But
and you
but
can't engage in commerce without an education.
Right. The old economic model based on slavery is you know, that model has gone out the window. We can only get stronger as a country if we work together.
The problem is I don't believe you. Because remember, they didn't give me the tools to work with you. I'm still
and you understand that, right? Yes, and that's the fault of the education system.
But the thing is, we're not trying to change it in any way.
Yeah.
But Tracy.
Yes, Al?
I think what happened was we did get the tools to work with. Unfortunately, in the 60s, those tools were taken away from us.
Absolutely.
Albeit,
welfare.
It was voluntarily. We voluntarily let them get taken away from us, but we just kind of traded them in for something we thought was going to be better for us.
Was that called war on poverty?
Yeah. You got hoodwinked.
And we were already rich.
Yeah. But actually, Tracy, it started much, much sooner than that. It actually started back in the 1909, 1910 with the big debate between W.E.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington. And Du Bois won that particular, thought frame or, those particular attitudes just took over. You know, we wanted to be like the white folks, so we tried to be like the white folks. Problem was.
But this is the problem that I have, and this is where I'm trying to go to. The problem is because we thought the white water was wetter and white ice was colder. And we've been conditioned since we got here off of a boat to believe that everything the white man does is always right. I was watching something on television last night about people getting cosmetic surgery to lighten their skin because they didn't want to be black.
Yeah, that's true.
You got to understand. I don't think people understand the conditioning of whites. And I'm not talking about. I'm not saying all white people. Y'all don't understand.
And all black people don't.
And I'm saying all black. But you have to understand that we were conditioned in America to say that I don't want to go to a black doctor because he ain't a good doctor. I got to go to a white doctor because a white doctor will treat me better. A white man will come behind Jeff and say something, say the same exact thing that Jeff says, and he'll get applauded.
Yep. And they won't say anything to me. But here's something that I want to bring out. If you look at this whole situation and you look at, and I'm going to couple this with the vote that went on down in, was it Texas, where the old line Republican had robocalls going out to the black community?
Right, I said that.
Okay. This is exactly this same situation. People have been relegated to think a certain thing. And the problem that the administration has with this right now is that all these people that are doing this are Democrats. Everybody there is a Democrat, guarantee you. And they don't know what to do with this. So they're calling out National Guards. They're doing all this other stuff. And I would make one announcement. I'd say, look, you protest peacefully, but the first Molotov cocktail, we're going to start shooting. The first rock, we're going to start shooting because the people of this town are more important than you being violent and acting crazy.
But the problem,
justice is going to come, but justice is an investigation at times in America.
But the problem is right now what's going on is you have people that are there are people that are protesting civilly. They just walking down the street singing their songs, whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
But there are some people that have infiltrated inside of this thing, and they say they're plants. They don't know who they are, and I can't put a name to it. I'm just saying what I heard that was reported. And that they're doing that kind of thing. And then I was looking at some of the television. These kids have masks on. They didn't tie their face up in a bandit.
Yeah.
They've been watching too much TV.
Yeah. Well,
good morning, Pionki.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Well, I was listening to your conversation. You're absolutely right. There are other outside individuals who's taking advantage of these situations. And the people wearing masks because of the tear gas, maybe. I heard somebody say it's the Crips in the blood. Well, there's no Crips in the blood in this area.
No, they flew in. They flew people in. People are in there from Oakland, from
New York.
Well,
I'm saying
from
this area.
Oh.
Well, I'm just saying. They flew people in.
New York, all over the place from what I understand.
Yeah, well,
exactly.
There's no Crips and Bloods in this area. And the people that does the peaceful march. See, the people in this area, the whole premise of that protest is that people want justice. They want the individual, the victim, to have been afforded his constitutional protection. And that's basically what it was about. You know, I made the mention that I've seen videos of black males standing around watching another man violate and abuse a black woman and slap her. And she has to pick up the phone and call the police, and white police come to the scene to protect her.
Right now in Detroit, they're watching folks getting stomped, you know, getting robbed and stomped at gas stations, and they sitting there clapping and looking at them and tending their own business. Ain't nobody saying nothing.
Yeah. So that's what I say.
An old man got beat down in Detroit not too long ago, to where he almost died.
Yeah, I've seen a video where a guy, I've seen a video there too. So, you know, these things go on in this society, and you're now beginning to see them.
Beyonce, I got to say one thing. Based on your statement that they're flying in because they want to protect constitutional rights, that's what you stated.
No, I didn't say they want to protect constitutional rights. I said the people of the community wanted that young victim to be afforded his constitutional protection of due process and not be shot down. Now you
there's no Crips.
Well, let me finish.
Hold on, Ben. Go ahead, Beyonce, finish your statement. Because I didn't.
I said there
is
no Crips and Bloods in that area. Mm-hmm. Jeff said they was being flying in. Well, I said from here they not. Maybe they are being, but there are a lot of elements coming from the outside taking advantage of the situation.
Okay,
go ahead, Ben.
If that's true, then you're saying that has nothing to do with race based, correct?
Well,
the
Constitution is supposed to protect you no matter who you are. It protects American citizens. Now,
correct.
How
those
that policing action goes on, yes, it is race-based, especially in this community, because it has a long history of being applied that way.
All right. That's what I wanted to get out, because it made it sound like it wasn't race-based, and I was going to come back and say, well, if the victim was white, would those same people have flown out there?
No.
So that's what I wanted to get clear.
No. But you have to, but again, this is a manifestation of a much larger systemic problem that is in the community, in every majority African-American community that is apathetic like this one. You cannot have 70% of your population be your race and you have no representation. That doesn't make sense, not even in your council.
Well, they had a couple. They had a black councilman. They had a black state rep. But the problem is this, Tracy. You're looking at the last 60 years of two things: the Great Society program, number one. Then you're looking at the last 50 years, 60 years maybe, of NEA and unions running your schools, because they have not taught your people how to think, how to have knowledge, or anything. These people are acting like animals, literally.
Do you understand?
I do understand.
But do you understand? I agree. But we have to really comprehend. I want people to understand this. Right now, you think this is about race.
Yeah, I mean,
and it ain't. It's not, when I say this is because of race. But this is coming to this lack of resources, lack of hope, lack of involvement, second-class citizenship mentality is coming to a city near you.
Well, it's coming. It's there. What difference is it here when they don't say anything about voter suppression and not against who got in as mayor, because he's a friend of mine, I feel. You had two chances to put an African-American in the mayor's seat here in Youngstown, Ohio, and you blew it.
They didn't blow it.
Yes, they
no,
did.
No, they didn't.
Because they didn't blow it.
They had voter suppression.
No, they suppressed their own vote because nobody told them that somebody was trying to take their vote. But notice that as soon as those elections were over,
it boiled down to voter apathy. And I'm
not apathetic.
They don't care. I mean, because I will say that most of the people that are looting didn't vote anyhow.
I agree with you. But think about it. You can't say they're apathetic because they voted for Barack Obama in record numbers. So what made them vote? They are Maslow's dog. Is that Maslow? Pavlov's dog voters. That's what they are. You ring the bell, and there
they move. 438, your mic is on.
Hey, Tracy.
Hey,
Sam. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. Good morning. The thing that I think a lot of people are tired of, and I agree, sort of important to some stuff, but Jeff, is that when are we going to come to a point to say to a policeman that if you shoot a black person, I don't care if you're white or black, you are basically going to face the consequence of your action, period. Because, I think yesterday you said it, there's no black policeman that shot a white kid. How come
we have not been able to find any cases.
Yes, you have.
Where? We haven't been able to find any.
Okay.
Hold on. Local call, your mic is on.
I didn't finish.
Hold on, Stanley. Go ahead, Steve. Hurry up.
Anyways, what I had to say is that black people, we have a long history of police brutality. And so throughout the history, because of, I've been hassled by the police myself, and police even pulled a gun on me. I had police make me get on the ground, and they pulled their guns on me. So, I mean, sometimes I can understand why we as a people have a hard time respecting the police. But still, even though that happened to me, as you always say, Mr. Tracy, you've always said that we have to teach our young men to, when you're dealing with the police, cooperate with them. Don't give them a reason to want to shoot. Because, I mean, one time I did give the police, one time I mouthed off with my mom and I got the police was getting ready to go up beside my head, and they would have done that. And my mom, they probably should have, because I probably should have been disrespecting my mom. But make a long story short, we should not give the police a reason, especially white police officers, and there's some blacks, a reason to do harm to us. We have to learn to cooperate with them, and that's what I learned to do. I mean, I learned, and I was angry that time when I was coming from the university. I went to a program during Black History Month. This happened about 11 and a half years ago. And to make a long story short, the police pulled me over, thought I was a black man that had a gun down at the university. Of course, fortunately, I had my ID card with me, because if I didn't, the police told me to take my hands out of my pockets, they were going to slap the handcuffs on me. So I can understand, but still, I cooperated. I didn't give them a reason to go up beside my head, didn't give them a reason to shoot. So that's what parents or mothers have to teach their sons. If I imagine that young man's father or mother would have taught him the same thing, maybe he would be living today. That's all I have to say, Ms. Tracy. Am I
right on point there, Steve?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And it's just, yeah, everybody's got to learn that the cops are the cops. You got, you know,
yeah,
I'm not going to give
cops,
them a reason to shoot me.
Yeah, but the cops, you, don't you think they have to learn also to stop thinking of if we have a problem to shoot somebody also? I'm sorry. You got to teach also the cops to have some maintenance and say, you know what, there's a situation that you need to shoot, but there's a situation that you don't. You don't need
right.
always to grab your gun and shoot somebody.
But here's the thing,
yeah.
though, Stanley. Here's the well, thing. When you're being beat on, okay, you got to protect yourself. I mean, this cop didn't know what was going on with this kid.
Okay,
know?
But
anybody
does it justify killing him? Does it justify
yeah,
killing him?
It's a justified shoot. It's a justified shoot. It's tragic that he got killed. But I mean, you know,
right.
hey, that's what happens. What would happen if the kid got the gun and shot the cop? You know, it's just kind of like self-preservation, Stanley. I mean, it sounds crude, but that's kind of like it.
No, I think it should be a better tactic that policemen could react when that situation is before shooting somebody. I'm sure there were 2,000 ways that a policeman and an expert could have said to the policeman,
yeah,
you could have done this, you could have done that, you could have... Yeah, policemen need to have the capacity of saying, I have 20 choices. If I have no choice, then that one. Because shooting somebody is not the final choice.
What about the
what about all the money was spent on tasers?
Yeah, what about tasers? Why couldn't he tase him?
Well,
they found
that tasers do not work on meth addicts.
Know a person is on a meth until you do analysis of their bodily system.
What are you going to do, stop and ask him for a drug test before you tase him? By then you're dead.
No, well, you don't have to
gun.
Get a drug test before you tase him. You can tase him, then get the blood test. That's
yeah.
what tasers
what
were for. Tasers
is,
were supposed
no,
to be non-lethal methods of subduing a suspect.
A meth addict, it's proven now that meth addicts, when they're on a certain amount of that drug, do not feel that a taser will not stop them.
Okay.
PCP guys.
Oh, I've seen cases where tasers have stopped people
I've seen a guy on PCP run through a double-sided sheetrock wall and not even think anything about it. I mean, ran straight through it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's some exceptions to the rule. That doesn't break the rule. There's some people that are going to go through it. So what? It's not an exception rule. 80% when you tase somebody will go down.
Are you willing to take that chance? I mean, if I was a cop, I would not take that chance. I'm going to shoot first and ask
Here's the point with that statement. Is that a police officer is supposed to be follow a policy and procedures that's set down by the department. And the reason why come they came up with the uses of tasers was to apply non-lethal force to suspects. And, of course, you can apply the lethal force if that non-lethal. So if that's the case, why don't we just go ahead and mount 50 caliber machine guns to police cars and just mow them down that way? Then you've got everything covered.
Exactly.
Well, that'll stop the riot problem.
And as a policeman, you're supposed to be basically able to have a mental state to say when a situation comes and you're stressed and this happened, to have a mental state saying when I'm supposed to shoot, when I'm not supposed to. If you don't have that mental state, don't be a policeman.
If we can adjust things along those lines, then why not use the philosophy of having majority black police force patrolling a majority black district because let's do that then.
That issue was asked of the police chief, and he just told him, he said, listen, there's a limited amount of African American individuals leaving the police academy. Okay, there's they can pretty much pick where they want to go. If they hire them in Ferguson, then someone can come along and pay them a higher job, higher wage.
And the reason why that is the police academy here in St. Louis over on off of, as a matter of fact, it's on Ferguson Avenue over in Pagedale. I went over there and got an application just out of curiosity to see what they asked. Man, they ask you for all kind of damn things that's irrelevant to that. You think you're trying to become a cook, but that's all right. You know, we had a plan to put those prerequisites in a high school whereas you don't have to go to a fire department that's all white control and beg them to hire you, then send you to a emergency medical technician certification course. The high school students, the black students, could have that already in hand and demand the jobs. So, I mean, if we can come up and say that you need to go to these extremes in order to handle these situations, then the other ideas about having a majority black fire force, a majority black police force service, a majority black community, that should apply just as well.
Now you're talking about
here's the problem. You're not going to run it. There's no way, and see, this is where perception is everything, okay? We only make up 12% of the population. So there's no way we're going to be a majority in anything.
I said in a community. In Ferguson, you have Ferguson. In that area here in St. Louis, you got police still. I'll get you on the other side.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. And I'm in studio with Jeff, and it is Tuesday, the 19th of August, 2014. I want to wish my mom a happy birthday. Let me see what else is going on. Don't forget about the library on Thursday. What, Jeff?
I want to throw a shout out to my boy.
Oh,
Alabama, you got a local call coming in.
Oh, that's Steve.
Oh,
what? You got to know.
Flash of my boy, Alabama, Montgomery. That's why we got our fingers like this. I forgot to put my fingers up, man.
You know I talked.
But I'm not for monkey.
You know I talked about you, right?
No, I didn't know nothing about that.
I put it on Facebook.
I'm not on Facebook.
You can go to Hades for lying as well as stealing. So let's understand this. I want you to understand. Listen to words. The words that are coming out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
You guys got together. You met Alabama.
Yeah.
Sticks has met South Carolina.
You ain't met nobody.
My name is on the door.
What's up with that?
I don't know.
You should have went with us.
I met Matt. I wasn't invited to the wedding.
No, Sticks told you to come down to go with them, and you didn't go.
Because they're trying to take a
whatever.
They're trying to take a Green Acres trip.
Green Acres is the place to be.
Listen, Jeff, I've been told. No. Listen, Jeff, listen. I am not a country girl. I like country western music. No,
I'm not already.
I'm not a country girl. I'm really not a country girl.
Thank God you're a country girl.
No. I'm a city person. I'm real city. I don't. No.
Gotta play that city country city.
You know, I don't mind going out in the middle of the country and then coming back in.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't. You know, you go out to the NASCAR and then you go back to the hotel and take a shower and stay in the air conditioned room,
mm-hmm.
and you chill out and you have room service and go to the spa. You don't sit out in a gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I just want to say, you saw my post a few months ago where I gave the warning to black people that they were getting ready to be replaced, and might as well, we thanked them for years.
Years of service?
Years of service. But we brainwashed you too far, and now you're violent. Because of your violent nature, we have to, and you're always wanting something from the government, we're going to replace you.
Yes, I've seen that.
Uh-huh. Well,
Jeff,
it's happening right before your eyes.
Chill. Listen. It's not really happening before your eyes.
Oh, yes.
No, it's not. This is what's happening, if you want to know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening is we are not, we are not really dealing with the systemic problem. And we've said this before. We are not monolithic in anything. We are not monolithic in what we're going to drive or how we're going to paint the room, even if we're married and or related. But what we are, and as diverse as we are,
mm-hmm.
we should not be as monolithic in our vote. And because of our apathy, because of our lack of education. And when I say education, I'm not talking about the degrees in which people hold. I'm talking about the
knowledge of how things work.
There's theory and then there's application.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening is people think that they are engaged in a process that they don't have a clue of, white and black, mind you. And I'm not saying that everybody should be a Republican. That is not what I'm saying. And I'm not saying that everyone should be a Democrat. But when you have everybody in your whole culture race at 98% leaning to the other side, telling me that Condoleezza Rice is a sellout because she don't believe racism is real and she come from Alabama because somebody told you she said she ain't never felt racism, but you didn't read a book, there's a problem. And I don't care how many degrees you have.
Yeah, and that was a bald-faced lie.
You know that. I know that, but I'm just saying.
Mm.
We've got people that say stuff like that, that believe that.
It's just like this. Immediately, because a white cop shot this young black boy, you had the people believing immediately that automatically he was innocent and he got shot for nothing.
But that's what the friends, you got to understand, people.
Well, I remember what the friend said.
That's what the friend said. The friend said that he was surrendering and he put his hands up and the man just shot him.
Yeah. And
that's what they said. And I'm quite sure, you got to realize, if you tell me my boy just got shot and then told me the policeman, the popo, he was surrendering and he just shot him, because we know there has been police.
Stuff like that.
But there's been stuff like that. But I was, a friend of ours called in yesterday. And he said something that was very, very profound from an officer standpoint. It takes a lot for an officer, even when he's a bad officer, to brandish his gun and to use it in broad daylight.
Yeah, I heard that witnesses. Call. That was an excellent call.
You know, it's kind of hard to do that. I mean, when you really, really think about that, you really have to be a real dumb cluck to see a man with his arms up. You got in broad daylight, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you got witnesses, and you shoot.
Mm-hmm.
On a jaywalking ticket,
right?
There's something wrong there. There's question there.
I tell you what, this police department is ridiculous. I kind of agree with them that this police chief needs to step down because he's stupid.
He doesn't need to step down.
Yeah, he does. He needs to step down.
They're gonna put the black guy in, and then he's gonna run for mayor, and he's gonna become mayor of the city.
Oh no, he's not gonna make mayor of the city.
Why not?
He's done. It's a predominantly black city.
Oh, no, the black guy, not the white
guy. Oh, yeah, the black guy deserves to be mayor of the city.
Not yet. I'm just saying.
He's
trying. He's working on it. He's working hard. He's working harder than anybody else.
He's the only sane voice that is speaking out on there. And both sides of these people are playing into this whole thing.
I got a question for you guys. I'm going to pull my phone lines up in just a second. I got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. Maybe somebody call President Obama because he won't take my phone call. But listen, he is an organizer.
Uh-huh.
Tell me, when he made a speech yesterday, he said he's going to send Eric Holder down there. But because he's an organizer, I know that he can't go down there and organize it himself.
Yeah, not anymore.
But why did he not actually say, listen, I'm going to send you some people that worked on my campaign? Because, you know, we have surrogates during the campaigns, and surrogates go out and do stuff in lieu of the candidate when they're running for office because there's too much state for everyone to catch everyone. So they go find surrogates, and there's some very, very bright surrogates that supported President Obama who are just as good, if not better, at organizing than he is. Why didn't he say, we're going to send a team down there to organize you so we can help you express your concerns and get your answers? Okay.
Yep. I'm with you.
I'm just sorry. I thought I'd ask. Why don't you answer the question?
Because this is the thing. That's a non...
Non-what?
How should I say it like this? It doesn't fit this like this. In my mind, anyway. And so I'm looking at... This is a terribly tragic situation. And I'd like to hear some other...
I'm going to ask them. They're there. Hold on, Jeff. Hold on. I got to get to the right screen. You know I'm over here playing.
Yeah. So, you know...
I'm busy. I've got things to do. Let's see. Let me ask. Eric, what do you think? I'm going to go down the line because I want to see what everyone has to say.
I think that the Ferguson Police Department, they just, like Jeff said, that guy's got to go.
they weren't prepared for this. It's been business as usual for way too long, and it's just time for a change.
But the question is, there's no – what happens – this is what bothers me. What happens after these things, and I've witnessed them with my own eyes, is that they leave the – you know, they cry them down. They come in there and put a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound, but nobody deals with the root problem of what's going on, and so nothing really happens. You follow me?
Uh-huh.
Disingenuous.
And that's not. What'd you say?
Disingenuous. That's what the president's action. That's what his action seems like. Yeah.
So you, Ben, you think that his actions are disingenuous?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't understand. I don't understand why is it that when it comes, he just will not face black people for some reason.
Well, let me say this. I was listening to MSNBC this morning, and they get ready to split this president straight down the middle, because they said that he's that way with everybody. I guess he went off on Harry Reid.
What?
They say he went off on Harry Reid and went and backed him up and told him to go figure it out for himself.
Bagman?
Yeah.
Harry Reid?
Yeah.
I would faint if I saw that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd fall right over.
You might as well get a put on, because you're going to fall. Because, yeah, they're backing up. They're backing up and they're switching over.
Yeah, because Hillary is coming up with her lying self. You know how the church people, because that's a lying wonder right there.
Yes, let me get down the line. Stop right there. South Carolina?
I don't think he should go. I think that, he may be overwhelmed by the situation. But, I mean, you know, it's one of those situations where if it happened in any police station, you know, it could have been, you know, the same thing. But on the break, you know, Fianchi and I were talking and they were talking about why there aren't any more African-American police officers. And the problem is when they go to the police academy, those candidates, when they graduate from the police academy, those candidates are pretty much, you know, grabbed up by all the police departments, and since there are so few of them, they can pretty much, you know, garner a premium for their services. And I mean, you know, though you got a town that's 67% black, that doesn't mean you're going to have the same ratio on the police department. So that's the misnomer, because we only make up 11% of the population. Even though we're a majority in some large cities, we're still a minority by far, by a long shot. So.
Let me say this. This is the issue. When you have people who don't value the people that they represent as people, then it's kind of hard for you to deal with them when a crisis arises.
Sure.
And you have leadership in that city, including the police chief, who did not value the people that were there. And because he has no value, he could not talk to them, because he only came out during election season and or appointment season, if he ever came out,
yeah,
to show him
to
that
me,
he actually cared.
To me, he's more like the Donald Sterling of mayors. Pretty much, Ferguson is like the L.A. Clippers to me.
Yeah, that's funny.
You know what I think? I don't think he's like the Donald Sterling. I think he is just ignorant. I mean, just ignorant. Pianchi, your mic is on. Go ahead, you're next.
Well, if organizations made a black cop in Pagedale who unjustifiably killed a black man, get out of the community, get out off the force, and when he went over and tried to join on with Berkeley, which is just adjacent to Ferguson, Flores, and Berkeley, the same group showed up at the meetings and made sure he wasn't hired there. Eventually ran him over into Illinois. So you mean we shouldn't do the same thing to this cop here who twice
you need to wait until you see what happens with this cop right here, whether the cop
that's what I say, he deserves his due process.
I got you.
But if he's unjustifiably, that's why I said unjustifiably killed Mr. Brown. If he found to have killed him unjustified, he's got to go. What are you going to leave him on there for?
But Bianchi, let me ask you this, because you live there. Just let me ask you this for just a, just give me a good clip of this. What happens when they find out that this is a justifiable shoot, that the police officer act within his scope of responsibility to discharge his firearm?
Well, if McCullough, who is a racist, a long-standing the prosecutor, if he hands it, I guarantee you that he won't be found guilty. He won't even probably ask for a grand jury to take the case.
No, I'm talking
about...
I'm not talking about what happens, because what is said is the federal government has come in. Eric Holder's coming in. He's doing an autopsy. They're going to do an investigation. You've got their own private investigation coming from the family.
And you know why that is, don't you?
Because they don't trust them.
Right. They don't trust them. Why don't they trust them? You can't say that you never gave them an opportunity to demonstrate and carry out your job and procedures, whereas
Pionki, you can earn trust, but in the past history, there is no trust. Pionki, I just want you to answer my question. My question is simple.
It's going to be a hell of a reaction, Tracy.
I need for you to answer the question, because right now you have three autopsies, you have three investigations going, and if the federal government comes in and says this is a justifiable shoot based upon their investigation, and he corroborates what the actual officer said, how is this going to play out in Ferguson, Missouri?
And also you have young women, black women, who have had run-ins with this officer, whereas he was not professional, and he was, you know, irate in carrying out those stops or whatever. And you also have the lawyer of the convenience store who came out and said that his client never did say that was Mike Brown. No, he couldn't even identify him.
But no,
that doesn't mean anything. It's clear that's who it is.
The robbery over at the convenience store had nothing to do with the jaywalking and the shooting. So since we separated,
there's no jaywalking in that area.
The officer, when he pulled him over, when he stopped him, he had no idea. So which means
there's no jaywalking in that area.
The boy knew, but I'm just saying,
my question is, if they find out the officer justified, because see, him harassing me and being a non-professional to me has nothing to do with Mike Brown. So the question is, what happens if they find out this is a justifiable shoot after they didn't burn up their city?
It's going to get bad. It's going to get real bad. The cops already got
I might get in on that.
Well, here's the thing, Pionki, what I was going to say to you, since you're there. All these years, they say it's been like this for years. Why? Why? You've had elections every single year.
You have a lot of young people in Ferguson that stays in that compartment complex. You don't have established folks, and so it's a lot of reasons why I'm coming. The city council is made up like it is. What you have now is whites who are holding on, elderly whites that live in that community, have not moved out or have not died off, and every year they're dying off and the numbers are changing. I mean, just like any area where you have, and you know, you had a program in St. Louis that was designed to push blacks out of black communities.
They do it all the time, but the thing is black people vote for the people to push them out.
This is what they wanted.
So this is the thing that's bothering me really bad. They right here locally.
I don't know what it happened to.
I know.
Go ahead.
I know exactly why it happens, Pionki. You know why it happens? Because you've allowed somebody to since the '60s tell you that they're on your side. They gave you these handouts and these programs, and they give you 30 cents on the dollar of those dollars collected for those programs, and that's supposed to be payment and compensation for you for the years that they did you wrong, when that's not what you need. You need to enter into being able to make wealth. And we don't make wealth in this nation. We
but
consume.
Jeff, you said a word there where you said you allowed. Let's take a young person coming out of high school. If they haven't seen but one movie all their life, they don't know of any other movie. You don't have Republicans or any other. You only have Democrats in these areas that have their own tactics, well-established tactics of conveying messages. When a Democratic candidate runs citywide, they put their picture on the advertisement that goes to the black community. They leave their pictures off the advertisement that goes to the white community. You have areas that are separated along racial lines. That's the way it is.
What? Hold on, Pionki. Hold on. Who? Somebody who's making a lot of noise in the background. Please.
That's not me.
South Carolina.
Please mute your mic.
That's not me. Not me this time.
Tracy, from Indianapolis to Atlanta, I watched tons of billboards with black faces on these billboards, advertising their businesses, running for office, all the way down through Atlanta. Now, I was really shocked because you don't see that here so much, and I was pleasantly surprised to see it. I mean, I was happy to see that. My point is this. There is a group of people that are very, very in control of their own destinies and lives, but the political structure does not support that. You have to, in other words, if you make it in this country being black, you made it in spite of the political structure.
This is, let me throw this in, and I'm going to pick up another call. This is the problem, Jeff. And Pionki, I agree with some of the things that you're saying. But the problem that we have and that we need to open up our hearts and our eyes to is this is not how it should be. And we as our own community do not trust and or is not honest with one another when it comes to what goes on. Because we're so afraid that somebody's going to get more than us that we don't work together for a common goal. See, you can't have, as I said this the other day, and I think me and Michigan got into it, you can't have a community like that and not be engaged in the process, and we have them all over the place. You can't have an all-black school board and not have education in your schools and blame the white man for your kids not being educated. You can't do that. That's your fault.
Well, you can't blame white.
You can't blame, city council, and you haven't. Look at Detroit. Detroit, they got 70%, black folks in the city, almost 80%, and they don't own nothing, don't control nothing, don't do nothing. And then blame the white man. And blame the white man for the woes of what's going on. And when I'm saying this, I'm just saying sometimes you need to step back from the situation and say something is wrong here, so what can I do to fix it and or change it? And we're not doing anything to change it. We're very, very passive. We're very, very reactionary. It makes no sense. Right now, since Zimmerman to Mike Brown, we ain't heard nothing about nothing changing statewide about doing nothing. We ain't doing nothing. We still voting the same way. We still kicking it. We still ain't getting the education. We're not doing nothing.
Go get your other call.
Private caller, your mic is on. Hello? Someone called from an unlisted number.
Yeah, I'm just listening. You're just saying the same thing over and over and over and over, though.
But it's the truth, ain't it?
But what are we doing about it, though? We know that. We know we're not united in any kind of way.
But I know I'm changing my paradigm.
See, that's the thing. You have to go it alone on this because the political structure is calling me an Uncle Tom. okay? They're called, because I don't want to run with the lemmings that are rushing to the sea to drown themselves.
Yeah, well, they don't know what Uncle Tom is. Some people, they're not Uncle Tom, they just sellouts.
Either way, they're calling me both.
Hold on. So why are you calling me a sellout?
I ain't calling nobody a sellout.
No, I'm not talking about. No, my question is,
some people just disingenuous when you listen to people on the radio what they're saying.
But my question
is, I'm just listening to you about this, what happened with the Mike Brown incident. It just seems like when somebody black says, if it's a black witness don't mean nothing. But if somebody, a white person come out and say something, we'll always go with what they're saying and disregard what the black person that was there said. Because we don't believe in. We don't believe in each other. It's a part of the whole system is set up where we don't trust each other. We don't want to do nothing with each other. When somebody comes up with an idea, if they don't believe in the same thing we believe, then we're not going to get together and do it.
But my question is, what makes me a sellout?
When you don't want to work with your own people.
So what does that mean? Because I don't do... Let me finish my question. Let me finish my question. Because the question is, just because I don't do things the way you do, what makes me a sellout and you not?
I just told you. I didn't call you a sellout. I said
But I've never told another black person you're a sellout. I've never done that.
Neither have I. Oh, yes, I did. I told Diva that.
But I've never told another black person that they were a sellout. So the question is, because I found out that everybody does things differently and everybody has passions. Now, there are things that people do that I don't agree with, and there are people that I know that I won't follow. But you know, if there's a person that you know that is not doing anything for you, you won't go and do something with someone else because you don't agree with them because they have white friends? That's the problem that I'm having.
The sellout would be permanent.
I don't have a problem. You're asking me a question, but you won't let me answer.
Go ahead and answer.
I don't have a problem with anybody who has a white friend. But if your white because before your black family, I got a problem with that. When we have family issues and we're going to deal with them, we don't bring a friend to the party. We bring family members to the party that's going to deal with the issue. We don't bring people outside the family to deal with family issues.
We'll bring everybody else from our other side
to deal with a situation we need to be dealing with at home.
Let me ask you this. You said you don't bring outsiders in. Do you side with your family when your family is wrong? Just because they're family?
I ain't going to side with nobody if they're wrong, whether they're black or white.
And so what I'm saying is, because I vote differently, I look at the glass differently. We get called a sellout. So when we go to run for office, when we go to do something and try to make systemic change in our own community, even locally, people say, well, you ain't down with the cause. You ain't with it. She's a sellout.
You're acting like everybody are down with the cause. Some people just, I don't have a problem with anybody. Like I said before, I've called this so many times, I don't have a problem with the dead, with the heart. I don't trust neither one of them.
But my question is,
Democrats in Youngstown who run in the city and grant, and I agree with you, and black people stay voting for, but I also believe that Republicans ain't going to do no better. If you vote in there just because they got an R behind their name, they're all of them. If you got racist people on both sides, then they're going to sit down together and have dinner together after it's all over with while we're all suffering here.
What I'm saying is, the problem is, why are you trusting people? I got to take a break. But you don't have to trust nobody. We ain't got to trust no Democrat or Republican. It ain't about trust. It's about engaging in the system.
No,
ain't listening, dude. This ain't about no trust. I ain't trying to get married to these people. This is about engaging in the system. I don't care if I trust them or not. I don't trust you, but you're going to do what I need for you to do. It ain't about trust. That's what's wrong. We're trying to trust somebody. You can't trust these jokers. None of them. Because they will lie. Everybody knows it. But everybody lies. Our problem is we're not engaged in the system. I'll take a break. I'll be right back.
To say that people are not engaged in the system is totally wrong. They're not engaged in the system the way you like them to be engaged in the system.
Get out and vote because they're not getting nothing out them voting for whoever it is.
That's whatever correct.
For,
people have apathy.
Whether it's a Democrat or Republican, especially in the inner city, they're not going to do anything for you. They're still going to do what they want for themselves. And you're talking about not getting enough police officers. One reason it's not enough black police officers is because you keep changing the laws. If you keep changing the laws where You don't have to live inside the city to be a police officer. That's making it easier for you to have more Caucasians working as a police officer inside the city where it's predominantly black than having enough black officers.
You're absolutely right. You have seen.
Nobody wants to talk about that issue.
I've seen black governments put in place residency clauses where if you're going to work for the city, you got to live in the city. Then your outside courts strike that down.
They did that here.
So you're absolutely right.
I heard that cop lived like 25 miles away, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he probably lived in St. Charles County. You got black pockets in St. Charles County, which is heavily Republican. And the blacks get treated the same way they do in Ferguson. So whether it's Democrat or Republican, it really don't have any bearing. And you have to look at this case by case, really, nowadays. White police officers want to work in black areas in order to do one of several things. One thing, they call it combat areas, combat zones. They want to have opportunity to work in the combat zone and see circumstances and experience situations that they want to experience and see where they're coming from and so on and so on and so on.
Yep. In Youngstown, you don't have enough black officers.
The reason why they don't, because we don't, and also in our community, we don't go to the process of recruiting and introducing these ideas and professions to young people in the high schools.
Right.
I tried to get the emergency medical technician licensing certification in the high school. Rather than when a black child graduate, then they got to go to a fire department and beg to get hired, then that department will send them to get their course and pay for it. Or you can go pay $3,000 out of your pocket and get it yourself. That's a prerequisite for them to look at you. Yeah.
Well, they just implemented that down here. Matter of fact, Florence School District 1, you can check it out.
In your school?
That's good. Yeah.
That's good. Now you can demand these – and see, here's the point. When whites control these fire districts that serve black communities, every other election they are running ballot issues to increase their pensions, increase their salaries. For the time that a fire person works, earning $70,000, $80,000 a year, that's a slap in the face. Then when they retire, they earn at least 50% of that pension. And if you live 25, 30, 40 miles away from where you are collecting a pension, what did that tell you? So you got blacks who's paying taxes out of their hard-earned money that's paying for somebody else to live and enjoy their life 25 or 30 miles away while your black children can't even get a job in the community that you're paying taxes for. That's a heck of a slap in the face.
Yep. I totally agree. I don't understand how Tracy and I just say that the autopsy supports what the police officer said.
We were talking about in a sellout, and let me say this. While all this is going on, there's a lot of stuff still going on that's still not being questioned. And this is changing the conversation of America again. You know, I think I'm going to sit down, and as soon as I find some time, I'm going to sit down and write, in the last 6 years, how many times has the conversation changed that has gotten us away from the issues that are going to affect us every day?
Right, because this ain't going to affect
because
you.
Because this conversation is like flipping through this book, and nobody's paying attention. And because of the lack of involvement in the American electorate and the change of the conversation, this is really bad. Just like I said, tell Jeff, and for me to tell Jeff some news is kind of unusual because usually he's on top of it. But to hear about the meeting with Harry Reid and President Obama, that's something. Because Jeff, when President Obama steps back, mm-hmm. and it's understanding he's not a warm, fuzzy guy. I think they said he's only been over to had a meeting with Congress like 98 times this year. And so when you see that he is not engaging in it, it tells you something about who he is and what he's doing. And I think this president has checked out, but he may have never checked in. And when it said that, well, they told him he could do this, all you had to do is go around and sell these things this way. And he didn't understand the process and the procedure of making it happen.
I don't think he understands the gravity of the decisions that come out of his office.
Well, he wasn't there long enough, Jeff.
Yeah, no.
I mean,
he would
have
to be.
No. You do. You have to have a. You can't. It's like I honestly, as bright as I think I am, I could not go and walk into a hospital and run.
A hospital, yeah. But
I've worked in a hospital. I've been there. He never made a decision while he was in the Senate.
What's all that
noise?
He's
never engaged. He's never been speaker. He's never got into the process of even getting elected through the process. He was a junior senator. He had not had a job, and all he had was an organizational effort. And you tell me that he's prepared? Prepared for what?
Tracy, I can't hear a word you say.
And that's
so. And he never ran a business. So tell me, how in the world is he prepared? Do you know how big the country is?
Well, it's 6.5 years in. We're seeing how prepared he was. But the thing is just. You know, you and I get slammed for criticizing him, and we did from the beginning because we knew who he was. But the thing is most people didn't because they don't follow politics. You know, they're ignorant of what's going on.
They follow politics from what they're told. And this goes back to what I'm saying. We have taken critical thinking out of the structure of America, and because you don't critically think, you have no thought.
You have no real thought that's going to do you any good. You have no deductive or inductive reasoning. That's why these people are running crazy. What's the reasoning behind this cop just coming up and shooting this guy down in cold blood? Why would he do it like that?
No. Why would he do it in broad daylight?
Right.
That he don't know because he's jaywalking. And he was just going down the street tending to his business. And he got
to his grandma.
And there was witnesses outside.
Yeah, why would you do
he
it
went
in the
house?
Can I say something?
Hold on,
Pionki. 70% black.
Wait a minute, Pionki. Hold on, Pionki. I mean, and I'm not saying he did or did not. I'm just saying, let's rationally think about that.
And he could have. I mean, but
he may have. And I'm not saying that he didn't. I'm just saying what happens is we should learn how to look at a situation in a 365 degree view, not just head on.
Right.
And the problem with us is that we look at things, and this is America at large for the majority, we look at things straight on and then look what's behind the curtain and around the corner. Go ahead, Pionki.
You know, I keep hearing you say jaywalk, and I've told you time and time that there's no jaywalking in that area. I don't know how that
happened.
It's down the street from where my grandson played ball at Forest Wood Park, and we're not playing
there no more.
That side of the street is from West Florissant all the way down to the...
I think you're missing the point. Because I called it...
Tracy, look.
I
ain't going to be on your show. You talk this...
Go! Bianchi, listen. Nobody argued with you. I didn't call it jaywalking.
I did.
Okay, you called it jaywalking. But what it was she was in the middle of the street blocking traffic in that lane of traffic. The cop told him to get out the street, him and his boy. That's what the deal was. Okay, now, that's where the confrontation started. So I wasn't arguing about what it is there. I've never been there before.
I called it jaywalking.
Yeah, well, it's not jaywalking. Jaywalking is crossing the street in the wrong place.
Listen, I called it jaywalking. If it offended you that I called it jaywalking, he was walking in the middle of the street, I'm sorry. But heck, they walk in the middle of the street all over Youngstown here, and I wish they wouldn't because I'm going to hit somebody one day if they don't move because I can't see at night.
Me too.
Yeah, but it won't be on purpose.
No. That's the problem.
But of course, they'll tell me it is. You missed it.
I worked in the prison system, and one of the questions they asked you was if an inmate was to come up to you and punch you in the face and then throw their hands up in the air, what is your response? And people didn't make it in because they said that they would hit them back and they would do this and the other. And the ones that say it's over with is the ones that made it in. When you become a police officer, you just can't be any type of person, any type of personality to become a police officer. You can't be hot-headed. You can't be a person that just because somebody hits you, now you're going to take your pistol out and shoot them. Them people like that are not supposed to be police officers. And you guys act like that's all we get out there is perfection. All the police officers that's out there is all professional, and they don't do nothing wrong. And they haven't killed and lynched black people in broad daylight before. And this is the first time it ever happened where somebody's done something in broad daylight that was wrong.
You're totally missing a point here, my brother, because of this. For years, I was my father's law clerk. My father was a prosecutor for many years, and he was a lawyer, civil lawyer, and all of that. I know tons of these cases inside and out. No, I'm not saying that whatsoever. So,
it's not coming out that way. They're teaching you how to think.
No, I said it's not coming out that way because they're teaching you how to think.
What I said was, so that I don't get this misconstrued, I said that you have to take a look at things in a 365-degree view. I am not casting judgment on whether the young man was walking down the street, whether he hit the cop, or whatever he was doing. Right now, a young man is dead. So my question is, why was he walking down the street in the middle of the street and blocking traffic anyhow? Maybe he was sick. My question is, why did he punch the officer? Why did he punch the officer? Who walks up to a police officer and just punches him? My question is, why would an officer just brandish his gun and shoot a man with witnesses around, with everybody there, and nobody say anything, and then pace the street? There's a lot of questions.
And nobody knows anything because
nobody's getting the answers to anything because they haven't even done anything yet.
No.
And they're burning down their city without any knowledge. And they don't know how to engage the process to get anything done so that no matter what happens, they win.
There you go. Jesse Jackson was on scene yesterday, and he gave Hannity an interview. He said he started bemoaning the fact that black unemployment there was at 60% or this, that, and the other. And that they don't have this, that, and the other, and this. And I wanted to grab him and wring his neck and say this to him. Jesse, how do you expect there to be black unemployment when you're pushing businesses to pay higher wages and they're not going to be able to hire as many people because they're small businesses, not like Walmart and Costco,
And Jesse, what about the school system that's not teaching these kids a doggone thing, even though he was about to go to, this young man was about to go to college this week? Okay, we understand. But here's the bottom line. Okay, so he was going to go to college for what? What kind of grades? What kind of situation is this whole thing? This is all craziness. You burnt down your own place for nothing.
Let me say this. What good is going to college with a mindset that you can't produce when you get out because you got it to go free and it makes it look good? And we have so many people that they've graduated from school. They've gone to some of these colleges around, and I'm saying around here because I'm here, but they've gone to these two-year technical schools, mm-hmm. and they still can't get a job. We've got jobs here that we can't find people for because they won't quit smoking reefer.
Precisely.
I mean, you got to understand, if we don't change our mindset, we're going to lose anyhow. So he's going to college. He's going to go to college, and he's going to learn what? What? There's got to be another way. And, yeah, I'm critical for him and critical on him and about him because he's not the only one. I got relatives just like him that could end up dead tomorrow.
Me three.
That's the problem.
And that is a problem, and nobody's saying. We have bad cops. There are some that are bad. By and large, they're not all bad. And by and large, we've gotten away from a lot of, not all of, but a lot of the attitudes of the 60s and 70s where you had these police stations and police departments that were really, really, oh, they ain't going to let no black people in. The little town I live in just got the first black officer 2 years ago,
but,
3 years
but,
ago.
Let me say this. If we teach our children and become parents again,
true.
My God. Listen to what we're talking about.
Ms. Tracy?
Yes, Steve?
Yes, Ms. Tracy. I think being that I'm old school, you have to, just like myself, you just have to learn to cooperate with the police. If they pull you over and question you, go along with them. And then you won't have the way about them coming down on you. But if you don't cooperate with them, then you are pretty much asking them to do harm to you. Because most of the times, if they're a white police officer, if you live off with them, you're giving them a reason to go off on you. So I think that's the same way with this young man. I think if his mother and father would have taught him, don't give the police a reason to go off on you, maybe this boy would probably be living today.
Say this, and I want you to I'm going to say this really slowly because I talk extremely fast, and I'm trying to slow down, but it's not working very well today. If we go back to parenting, and parenting is a responsibility. Parenting takes your wants and puts them into your child's needs. We start training our children up and disciplining them and letting them know what authority is. See, you don't have to agree with authority. You just have to respect authority and respect yourself. And see, if you respect authority and respect yourself, if authority is a wrong, I can come back and fight it later on. But you don't fight authority when you're not in the position of power. You got to understand that. And what's happened is our children and our young people are trying to fight the power from a position of weakness, and they're getting killed. If we teach our children self-respect, they'll get something.
This is true.
And we're not teaching them that. So we wonder why our children are ending up dead in the streets. We're wondering why cops are killing our children. We're wondering why things are happening. If you teach your child to go to school and to sit in that chair and respect that teacher, don't cuss the teacher out. Pull your pants up and get what that teacher has so that you can get yours. We'll go farther, but we won't do that. And the problem, again, is we've taken God out of the equation in totality. And when you take God out of a situation, you have chaos. And right now, you're seeing chaos manifestation because there is no order. And there's no order in the family, there's no order in the church, there's no order in the community, and we wonder why we can't get ahead. You don't even have men that you can marry. You got baby daddies.
That's it.
Yeah, that's it.
So you want to know why Mike Brown is dead? And from my understanding, his mom may look good right now, but when she found out he was dead, that's not how she looked. In the afternoon. But I'm going to leave that alone.
Yeah, nothing.
I'm just saying.
This is going to be crazy. This is crazy.
I'll be back. Sweet deals on News Talk 600. Your chance to try some of the best businesses in our area at a tremendous value. Every Friday morning at 9 a.m., log on to our website to take advantage of half-price gift certificates from our area restaurants, golf courses, spas, salons, and more. Visit our website and see upcoming deals and open offers that you can take advantage of right now. Every week, you'll find half-price deals from some of the area's best places to dine, play, and shop. So where else can you pay half price? Only right here at the home of the Sweet Deal. Visit our website and click on the link to see this week's deal, plus upcoming deals and open offers that are discounted even more. Then, get ready to shop Fridays at 9 a.m. So make your half-price deal, and within 10 minutes of your purchase, we'll email you a certificate to print. Sweet Deals, every Friday morning at 9 a.m. from 600WSOM.com.
Here at Pet Spa Salon on Western Reserve Road, we offer many services to our customers' pets, including bathing, grooming, nail trimming, and we even brush, bathe, and trim cats. Pet Spa Salon uses only all natural products. With 35 years' experience in the business, our expert staff works slowly and gently to put even the most fidgety pets at ease. Come into Pet Spa Salon and get your fur baby looking and feeling great. Open Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. 1122 Western Reserve Road. Call for an appointment. The women of Warren and the surrounding areas now have...
Yeah. This time, everyone faces challenges in their lives. Handling it on our own sometimes is too overwhelming, but Turning Point Counseling can help. Turning Point offers the highest quality, individualized, confidential behavioral health care. Our professional and caring staff can help you or your loved one get started on the road to recovery today. Turning Point Counseling, because behavioral health care is health care. Don't wait. Visit our website for more information or call today for care. Everybody faces challenges in their lives. Sometimes these challenges can be too much to handle on our own.
They don't listen to them at all.
This is Tracy and Friends. Listen to Tracy every weekday from 9 a.m. to noon on News Talk 600. Visit our website for more info about Tracy and Friends at www.tracyandfriends.com. That's T-R-A-C-E-Y and friends.com. Tracy and Friends on News Talk 600. WSOM, Salem, Youngstown, Warren, the home for afternoons with Tracy and Friends. News Talk 600 WSOM.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Richard Davies. No end in sight to the clashes in Ferguson, Missouri.
Oh, cool.
Hands up, don't shoot, shouted protesters upset over the killing of an unarmed black teenager by police. But there are also clashes that police blame on outsiders.
Together. We are not going to allow you to define our community.
That's Captain Ron Johnson with the Missouri Highway Patrol. He says bottles and Molotov cocktails were thrown from the crowd. Shots were also fired, prompting police to fire tear gas and flash grenades. Several autopsies are involved in the case of Michael Brown, who was shot by a police officer. Analysis from ABC News legal affairs anchor Dan Abrams.
The autopsy and the ballistics, to me, are essential in this case. Why? Because if the weapon was fired from a distance, if these six shots were taken from far away and all of the bullets hit him in the front, that's going to be a very tough spot for the police officer to be in.
But if the shots were fired at close range, the police officer could say there was a struggle. Firefighters from across California are being sent to Oakhurst, the picturesque tourist town, 16 miles from the National Park. Hundreds of evacuations have been ordered. A fast-moving blaze is threatening homes and businesses. ABC's Neil Karlinski is in Oakhurst.
I've got the mask here because the smoke and fumes are so intense. This fire came up very fast. Flames, which ravaged through here so quickly, much of this town was caught completely off guard.
Schools are closed as a precaution. Deaths and hospitalizations for heart disease and stroke in America have dropped dramatically over the past decade. That positive finding from a big study of Medicare patients, the declines noted from 1999 to 2011, are the result of lifestyle changes and better treatment as well as preventive measures. This is ABC News.
Attention taxpayers, if you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS, it's a fact that they have the power to take everything you own, including your home, business, and even your freedom. If you've received a letter from the IRS, don't ignore it. Your problem will only continue to get worse. Here's the good news. The IRS has recently released new programs geared at helping struggling taxpayers, where you may now qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe, including penalties and interest, or you may qualify for other special programs. If you're being audited, have years of unfiled tax returns, have a federal tax lien, or worse yet, are being issued a wage garnishment or bank levy, listen carefully. Authority Tax Services expert staff of ex-IRS agents, attorneys, and CPAs can immediately protect you from IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. Call 800-239-3837. That's 800-239-3837. 800-239-3837.
The international organization charged with overseeing the destruction of Syria's chemical weapons program says the most crucial part of it has been completed. The Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons says the operation was carried out on board a U.S. vessel. The risky rescue to free a teenage hiker in Colorado has been carried out. ABC's Clayton Sandell with details.
A 16-year-old girl is recovering from serious injuries after going on a hike that nearly killed her. The girl falling from the top of Horsetooth Rock, about an hour north of Denver on Monday, landing in a steep crevice, stopping just short of a cliff, hundreds of feet straight down. Unable to walk after severely injuring her ankle, the girl, strapped on a stretcher, is carried delicately by rescuers navigating down an extremely treacherous slope. Clayton Sandell, ABC News, Denver.
Stock market averages, they're up again today. Richard Davies, ABC News.
Safe Auto's system is really smart. If you've ever had car insurance with Safe Auto before, they'll get you up and running quick and easy with the right car insurance for the right price. Welcome back, Safe Auto. Call, click, and enjoy the road ahead.
Attention taxpayers, if you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS, it's a fact that they have the power to take everything you own, including your home, business, and even your freedom. If you've received a letter from the IRS, don't ignore it. Your problem will only continue to get worse. Here's the good news. The IRS has recently released new programs geared at helping struggling taxpayers, where you may now qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe, including penalties and interest, or you may qualify for other special programs. If you're being audited, have years of unfiled tax returns, have a federal tax lien, or worse yet, are being issued a wage garnishment or bank levy, listen carefully. Authority Tax Services expert staff of ex-IRS agents, attorneys, and CPAs can immediately protect you from IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. Call 800-239-3837. That's 800-239-3837. 800-239-3837.
Have you been thinking that the stock market and 401ks aren't what they're cracked up to be? Listen to Straight Talk Wealth with David Gallner every Saturday at 11 a.m. on News Talk 600 WSOM.
Geico presents Strange Savings Stories. Ken Marcus was making a pastrami sandwich when he noticed an odd pattern on a slice of pumpernickel bread, one that spelled out Geico. Ken found himself visiting Geico.com, saving hundreds of dollars on car insurance with great discounts. Later, Ken felt conflicted whether or not he should eat the slice of bread that saved him so much money. But he was so hungry.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Never believe in the good of all mankind.
Welcome to Tracy and Friends, weekdays from 9 to noon. The show that stimulates your mind on the issues of the day. Call the show at 347-945-5229 or toll free at 1-800-530-WSOM. That's 347-945-5229 or 1-800-530-WSOM. And now, here's Tracy Winbush.
People moving out, people moving in. Why? Because of the color of the skin.
Run, 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 but you sure can't hide.
An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I'll set you free.
Hey, we're back, and you're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229. And I'm going off because I'm passionate about my community. I am an African-American female who lives in America, who cares about the future of America, and I care about the involvement of African-Americans that live in America. And it's very, very, very important to me that we begin to change our paradigm, because the generation behind us is supposed to be better than us. And right now, that's not working. In other cultures, true, but definitely not in the black community. And we are disintegrating overnight. And I'm watching, you know, between the incarceration and the mortality rate, it's not good. And our politics, as I keep on telling everyone, and no one wants to hear me, everything you touch has a political component to it. It has a piece of legislation behind it. From everything in your car. All right, my air conditioner went out at the house, and when I bought my air conditioner 15 years ago, it was a whole lot less. But because of EPA and regulations, they have made it to where it almost is going to cost me another house. And what I'm saying is we're not paying attention. And I have a friend on with me, and he's been on with us before, and I want to thank him for coming on with me. His name is Derek Green. And Jeff is still here in studio, and he was going to talk to us about immigration and how it's impacting the African-American community. But I also want him to talk about how it's affecting the African-American community and tie it into what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri, because as you've heard Jeff say, that because we no longer count, they can just let us burn.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, Derek, good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Welcome to the Madhouse.
All right. It's good to be here.
Because I'm really having problems today.
It sounds like it. I can hear the passion in your voice, and over the weekend, you know, I was expressing some of the same compassion, some of the same passion. Probably not as G-rated, but I was passionate about what was going on in Missouri and in other parts of the country, and so I can completely understand where you're coming from.
It has been a week. I mean, when you see it comes, and it comes from lack of education, and people don't understand that if you don't know how to engage in a system, you can't participate.
That's the thing, but I would take it a step further, because I'm a bit more probably cynical in that I think the problem is that the blacks are engaged in the system, but they're engaged in the wrong aspects of the system. I think what we're seeing in Ferguson, and I think Ferguson is just emblematic of cities across the country, is that blacks are engaged in a system as much as they want to be, but they're voting and they're supporting and they're advocating things that go against their best interests. And so after several generations of this type of support and unflinching support, this is what you get. The system turns in on itself, and I think that we are at a crossroads, to be frank, in black America, that with all the issues affecting us directly, and all the policies that we've supported to bring us to this point, are we going to just express this frustration and continue doing what we're doing politically, morally, spiritually, economically, or are we going to take a collective step back, reassess the situation, and start making decisions that's going to serve us rather than the people who claim to have our best interests at heart?
You want me to answer that question?
Sure.
No.
Let
me tell you
yeah,
what.
I would like to be – I think I know what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Because I'm a Democrat. and the Republicans, they don't mean it's no good. They for the rich man.
And they're racist.
Oh, no, I forgot about that.
All racist. All of them.
Including you.
Don't forget that.
Racist.
They're racist. You know, and that – as sad as that is, that just shows you how effective messaging has been for Democrats over the last 50 years. But it also points to how terrible the public relations response to those charges are by self-identified Republicans and conservatives.
Derek, you'd be so proud of me. I was
why's
at
that?
I was at a meeting on Saturday morning with the chairwoman of the RNC. And I got up in the middle of the, and I drove about an hour and 10 minutes to get to my destination. So while I was riding, Ferguson was burning, and she got done telling us all that we were going to be doing for as Republicans and moving forward and doing all that. I just came out and told her, with all that said, if we don't change the conversation at the national level, all that we're doing is spinning our wheels and wasting time.
That's right. That's exactly
and
right.
I wasn't as politically correct as I was just now.
That's good. I think those people in positions of leadership who are profess to have the best interest of the country at heart need to be told in very terse language the reality of the situation that they're helping to create.
And I told her in an open meeting, so there was, it wasn't a one-on-one conversation, so I put her on the spot.
Nice. What was her response?
She tried to do something and put it in perspective, and then she tried to say, we don't control messaging. I said, but we do. Rush Limbaughs and you allow them to carry your water. You can't allow them to carry your water and then say that they don't speak for you when you don't like the water that they carry.
That's right.
And they need to understand that. And so if you want to carry our water, you will make sure that you season what you say, so that it does not offend the people that we're trying to include, because the message is all about the party of inclusion. And I will say this as a Republican where I am, they're telling me that I am included, and they treat me that way, and I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And politics, people, as somebody called in earlier, talking about, well, I don't trust them. I don't trust anybody. This is not about trust. This is about policy. And I think that's what's wrong with us. We're trying to find a friend.
Yeah, that is true right there, and that's the dynamic, and I know you're going to get into something that I've been saying, because more or less, you know, I facetiously put out a post on Facebook telling black people that, you know, thank you for your years of service, but we're replacing you. And it's because of your violent behavior and your dependency on government, we can no longer support you. And we're going to replace you with people from Central America, et cetera. So, you know, just be advised so you know what's going on when it happens. And, you know, I got a lot of hate posts, of course, for that. But you go ahead and expound on it and tell me how far off I am or how close I am to the truth.
Well, you know, I think – when it comes to illegal immigration, I think obviously if the president decides to act and extends amnesty to, you know, 6, 7, 8 million illegal immigrants, I think it's going to be disastrous for the black community, obviously. I think it's going to complicate things in terms of increasing competition for economic opportunities that don't exist. I think that it's going to depress wages because you're going to have an influx of people who are willing to work for lower than the pay, whether it's under the table or other type of benefits that can't be tracked. And so it's going to increase the unemployment in the black community. It's going to depress the wages of those who are able to find work. And it's also going to complicate matters where blacks are hurt the most, whether it's in education, whether it's in health, whether it's in receiving public assistance, because all of those resources in those three different areas are going to be spread thin to cover the influx of people who are going to be unable to find a job, who's going to need public assistance, and who's going to need access to health care. Now, that said, and we can talk about that in greater detail, the cynic in me says one of the reasons why you see black Americans, particularly in Chicago and Houston and Detroit, getting upset about the president's intended act, not only because of the reasons that I said, but I think that there's a realization within black America that with an influx of illegal immigrants, they're going to supplant and displace black Americans as the quote-unquote chosen minority. You know, the influence that we used to be able to garner is going to be null and void because they're going to continue to ignore us. I mean, you've seen what's happened over the last, again, the 40 and 50 years. You have unflinching loyalty to one party in which they no longer have to address our needs, and then you have another party that says if they voted that way for 50 years and this is what they got, and they continue to vote in that particular fashion, there's absolutely nothing that we can say or do to convince them of the error of their ways. So they're actually blacks. We've actually done it to ourselves, and we're ignored by both parties. But what you're seeing is blacks realizing that with the influx of illegal immigration, blacks are supplanted as that chosen minority. And if we are supplanted in the ways that we're about to, in the way it's about to happen, all the rioting, all the demonstration isn't going to make any bit of difference because both parties are going to put everything that they have into trying to convince Hispanics to come and vote for them and to support them. And so what you said, even though it was cynical, you were absolutely right, and you might have gotten a lot of reaction, rightly so, but you're actually right. And that's a cynic in me, but that's something that we've done to ourselves, and we have no one to blame but us for our the way we voted and the way we've advocated politically for the last, you know, several generations.
But look at what we've done, and look at this. The Latin Americans have integrated themselves into the system, and if you look around, they are a little bit everywhere. And mm-hmm. When I first started my show, I had another girl on here, and her name was Sandra, and she was Mexican American, and she said they're taught Mexican first or Latin first, Latina first, then everything else. Mm. And I was also over the weekend I was in a Middle Eastern grocery store, and I was talking to the owner, and he was from Persia.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's Palestinian. I'm sorry, he's Palestinian.
Palestinian.
Big difference. He's Palestinian, and he says my family is still over in the Gaza Strip, mm-hmm. and he said when my brother bleeds, I bleed.
Hmm.
I like it, agree with them, disagree with them, like them, love them, whatever. And I began to think about what they said, and I'm like, wow. But when I look at my own community, it doesn't ring that way in any way, shape, or form, because we have not learned the root word of common unity, to work together, collaboration, cooperation, and to work together on that which we agree on, and then we'll deal with our differences later on. Because
I
no
agree.
One's speaking for us.
Well,
Jesse
here's the thing:
doesn't represent me, and neither does Al Sharpton.
Right.
So who's talking? Who's speaking for the black people today? Who actually is sitting at the tables of influence, making sure that our voices are heard and cares?
Only us. We're not that far at the table. Listen, we can't be those people.
Why not?
Because they're still in touch with culture, and it's with the knowledge of what's going on. What we don't have is a sense of community that is unified anymore. Because every time that we try to become independently wealthy, we were smacked down in this country. Now, that created a mindset that the 60s were ripe to take us over with, in my estimation. In other words, when the Great Society programs came and they started letting a couple of black people get on those Great Society programs, boom, you had a people that were just soaking it up because, oh, they don't have to work so hard to get that little bit of money to exist with. So, but we're not in touch with our people over in Africa or any of those cultures which we've come from,
but
a myriad of different types.
Does it make a difference?
Yes.
Why?
Because you don't have anything that you're proud of that you belong to.
Why can't I just be proud of being a child of God?
Well, you can, but no, but everybody's not a child of God, Tracy.
Then they need to become one.
Well,
it's free.
That may be, but you can't build a culture on that because it's too much error.
But what I'm saying is,
in how that's taught.
But what I'm saying is, if I look back over our span of time in the last 50 years, and if I look at my grandmother, and I look at my ancestry, just the ones that I know, they were very, very rich in respect and culture. You had, even if they didn't have education, they were rich.
Okay.
Hey, I don't have children, but my, you know, kids around me, it's like they don't know what they, I don't understand. You follow, I mean, there's no care. Hey, Derek, jump in. I mean, they don't even believe in who we are, let alone across the pond.
Well, the Latino.
Hold on. Derek, go ahead.
Well, I think there's a number of issues. I think, one, I think that black people have coalesced around something that defines us, but it's not culture-based. There's no values to draw upon. What we've coalesced around is racial solidarity. And I think if we look back into recent American history, we had a number of leaders who tried to teach not only our community but the wider community that color doesn't matter. So if we shouldn't rely on something as ephemeral as racial solidarity, because race doesn't tell us anything. It's not indicative of the character of the person. So we've chosen racial solidarity versus cultural values, and I think that's what you're talking about, Tracy, because I remember my grandmother, both of my grandmothers and my grandfathers, talking in ways that would be considered almost sellout today. You know, my grandfather used to always say, when you leave this house, you're not just representing yourself, you're representing me. So you're going to tuck your shirt. And I remember my grandfather mowing the grass in church shoes, you know, suspenders, shirt tucked in, the whole thing. You know, it was even doing menial housework, there was a certain level of dignity that he embodied to try to model not only for his children but for his grandchildren. We don't have that anymore. There's been some sort of shift in American culture, in black American culture, in which that type of dignity that was passed on not only from my grandparents but their grandparents and so on and so forth, you know, going back to the end of slavery. Because why? Because free blacks wanted to prove to their white counterparts that they were every bit as dignified in a human being as they were. So they had a lot to prove. And that was
that was
transmitted from generation to generation. Now, since the 60s, what we've done, and I do think it coalesces with the civil rights, the passage of the civil rights movement, and other things of the countercultural nature of the 60s, is that we've destigmatized destructive behaviors. So out of wedlock births are no longer stigmatized, they're just accepted. Men not getting married and not being men and going out and working and providing for their family has been destigmatized. We've destigmatized all these counterproductive and self-destructive behaviors that, again, after 40 and 50 years, this is the fruit of the seeds that we've borne. So we can't complain at the wider community. We don't need to even go back to Africa, because there's no continuous culture in Africa. We can come back to the late 19th century and early 20th century and look at those people in our community who were dignified and who transmitted culture and re-embrace that culture as part of self-reparation. But until we do that, until we admit that the way we've been doing things for 30, 40 years have been wrong, which is a humbling thing to do, by the way, we're just going to continue embarrassing ourselves and letting the disproportionate few that we see in Ferguson and other places having their behaviors represent us as a whole, and I think that does, you know, all of us a disservice.
Because my I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, we have the dignity that we've lost in our own community. Not that long ago, you would never curse in front of your parents, let alone curse them. And so we talk about the immigration, and when I see them coming over here, I don't see a lot. When I look at a lot of my Latin friends and their family unit, there is still a they still have a dignity to themselves, even though they have Americanized in a lot of ways. And you know, they don't. I don't think they abort too many babies.
Not at the level and expediency at which blacks do.
I don't, and they don't, and the young men. I mean, yeah, there's always, and don't get me wrong, there are always exceptions to the rule. I know that, but there's a lot of them out there that they are more family oriented. They're just not dropping kids and going and wayward. They're coming here with a plan. They want to live. They come to America to live. They don't come here to exist.
You know, it's and that's the thing. Is, you know, many people talk about the fact that we, you know, whether it's blacks or not, you know, people who've been here for several generations, they kind of lose what it really means to have this type of freedom and access to create your own economic opportunity. We've been lulled to sleep. You know, we've created such an affluent, bored, insulated society that we don't really understand the trials and tribulations that many people across the world go through, not just to get here, but just to experience a fraction of what we experience here in the country. And so I think we've been lulled to sleep. And I think that we, you know, again, if we're going microcosm and then going blowing it up, you know, we as blacks have to realize that killing, you know, 30 or 40 or 50% of our babies in the womb and then doing our level best to kill the ones on the streets that survive isn't, it doesn't work well for prosperity. You know, we cannot continue to kill ourselves at the rate that we're doing. We are going to have to go and say, listen, yes, racism existed, and on this side of heaven, some way, shape, or form, racism, bigotry, sexism, it's all going to continue to exist until the second coming. But until then, we have to control what we are able to control. It's not racist that our kids can't read. You know, kids aren't going to learn to read if mothers aren't trying to impress upon them the importance of reading. They can't do that if mothers are working two jobs to provide for their family because there's no man around. It's not racism to tell people to pull up their pants and to respect themselves and others around them. It's not racist to say stop stealing. All of these types of things, blacks have forfeited the ability to self-police ourselves, and I think that's what really I'm trying to say is that we no longer correct ourselves in public because, you know, the unwritten rule about, you know, contradicting a black person in public, you know, unless that person is a black conservative, right? You know, you don't go and do that in public, right? We need to re-embrace that type of mentality because, again, the wider culture, whether it's in politics and unfortunately in some churches, civic leaders and things of that nature, they're not doing it. They're worried about themselves. They're trying to maintain power. They're trying to achieve power. We have to do it amongst ourselves, and until we do it, again, until we do it, we're going to continue to see what we're seeing in Ferguson. We're going to continue to see what we see on the streets of Chicago or Detroit or Oakland or Los Angeles or New York. All of that isn't racism-based.
And as a matter of fact, actually, and I said that earlier, I said we don't realize that a lot of what you're seeing is not race-based. It is frustration.
Mm-hmm.
It is ignorance. But my question, did you ever notice that you haven't seen any black preachers up trying to bring peace to the community there?
You know what? I saw two. But, yes, you're right. Not bringing peace. I saw two trying to quell the crowds, but their mentality and what they were saying.
Right.
It's trying to embolden. That's right. That's exactly right. And what I see with that is local preachers trying to make a name for themselves by doing the wrong thing. You want to make a name for yourself, one, you're in the wrong business being a preacher. But two, if you want to have influence, you know what I'm saying? If you want to have influence, You have to go out there and do the right thing based on the gospel in which you were commissioned to preach. And what they're doing is countering the gospel. And that's where my frustration as a person who's, you know, about to graduate from seminary and seeing these types of things, I get really frustrated and I say, you know what? The type of mentality has even infected the church on a whole scale, but even in our community, and that's unfortunate because, again, history shows us in this country that the black church was the beacon of the black community, and when you have that go,
the lights out.
You know, that's right.
The lights out. Because I'm looking here, and I'm looking at the immigration, and I do understand where Jeff is coming from, that they are replacing you, and they actually, you, in a lot of ways, you've been replaced. Because right now, if you look at the conversation across the country, when it comes to policy and different types of change, you get they talk about Latino,
mm-hmm.
and they talk about gay rights, mm-hmm. LGBT. You don't hear any conversation that has African American. As a matter of fact, if you go through the actually platforms of the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, you will find that the Democrats do not mention African Americans anywhere.
Hmm.
Yet the Republicans mention, I believe they are mentioned at least twice in their whole platform. But it is amazing when you talk about we're already been replaced because we no longer exist in the minds of people. If you really look at it, we think that we're really in the forefront mind of these people, that people are sitting up plotting against black people in America, when in actuality they don't even think about us.
That's right.
We're really non-existent, and when they do think about us, it's not always pleasant.
Well, it's not at all. Yep. I mean, they don't need you. And when you get into this situation where you've been so dependent on systems that and you almost refuse to go it alone and do it yourself.
But you can't. I mean, you it's like when you go to the hospital and you lay in the bed for too long, it makes you weak.
Well, that's my point.
And that's what I'm saying. And what they've done is they've weakened you to where you don't know that you're a slave, but you are. And I'll mobilize you when I need you, but when I don't need you, you know, you just we'll keep you alive.
That's right.
Existing, because we need your vote. We need your support.
Yep.
Unfortunately, our most enterprising system is our drug dealer community. That's really the model of the inner city black community, and it's not good. And because other than that, it's just like the kids in my wife's class that said, asked them what they wanted to do when they got old, and they said, I want to go get on SSI.
Hmm.
See, that's telling. And those are sobering facts.
Jack, have you heard and have you seen that where parents are now on purpose not focusing in on their children on their developmental skills, so that they can get diagnosed with ADD and ADHD, so they can get on Social Security or SSI.
You know, I haven't noticed that aspect specifically. I've noticed parents of all hues over the last 10 to 15 years, not really parenting, but trying to be friends. But I think that when you have in particular communities such as the black community, where you already have dysfunctional families and families that have been destroyed, that comes to that again. That fruit is born a lot quicker with a lot more disastrous results. To be honest with you, again, the cynic in me says that this SSI, you know, the disability and all these other forms of public assistance is really, to be honest with you, the government paying black people just to get out of the way. It's just to pay them and get out of the way, and then the frustration that you're talking about, which I do agree with. What you see in place like Ferguson or other places, I think that frustration is, again, it's because we're being ignored, we've been paid to go away, but again, that frustration is misdirected because of our political advocacy and what we've supported and the policies, the people who we've supported, it's coming home to us. This is the fruit. We've done this to us. Our frustration is misdirected. We are upset, but we don't need to take it out on our own communities. We don't need to take it out in places where we live. We need to take it out on the politicians that we've supported, again, reassessing our allegiance politically and saying, okay, no longer are we supporting you because this is what we get. We're going to go and actually consider an alternative viewpoint. We may not agree with everything, but we're going to consider it. And I don't think that blacks have even considered it, let alone voted for it.
Were you in Los Angeles during the L.A. riots?
I was not.
Okay. Because I was living there then, and that's why I asked you. And,
okay.
You know, when I was there, I was in my 20s. And I'm from a small town, and I had never seen anything like that in my life. And when you see it happening, and I lived in the inner city,
mm-hmm.
and people were frustrated, but I watched the quote unquote leadership of Los Angeles.
Right.
I watched them not prepare for the verdict, because in my mind it just came to me. I said, "Wow, they need to do something." So if it doesn't turn out the way that they want it to turn out, they still have recourse, and they know how to fight the system. Because I believe if you're going to fight, you fight with your brains and not with your brawn.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that works. When I look at Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, he was all about, he understood what molded and what moved America.
Mm-hmm.
So when we didn't get what he wanted, we just don't ride the bus anymore at all. You won't get our money.
Right.
We won't support you. And today we have these so-called leaders who are in disgust, but you don't see any of them trying to be proactive. And I said to my co-host, as well as to the listening audience this morning, so what happens if they come back and find out that this was a justifiable shoot?
Mm-hmm.
So if they went haywire over the name of the officer and the name and then the autopsy, what will they do when they say, well, this was a justifiable discharge of a firearm by a police officer?
You know, I think as with what we saw last summer, or maybe it's the previous summer at this point, regarding Trayvon Martin, I think that it's already been adjudicated in public. They've already come to their decision, and no amount of facts are going to allow them to pierce that narrative in which they've created for themselves. For them, they just want to have license to act out because racism still exists, and it exists in the form of cops targeting quote unquote innocent blacks. So if it's justified, if it comes out that he did struggle with the officer, if that he attacked the officer, that he was charging the officer, so on and so forth, it's not going to matter. What's going to matter is the officer still shouldn't have killed him regardless of what he did. So not only are we justifying behavior, we're condemning a cop not in the situation in which he may feel his life is in danger. It's just, it's not going to change anything. You know, it's just that it's been wrapped up. They've been emotionally manipulated. And, you know, whether it's Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson or those local leaders there that are trying to create names for themselves, they're just going to try to, you know, fan that emotion and use it for their benefit at the expense of our well-being. Facts don't matter. Facts don't matter.
You can't succeed this way.
Nope.
Well, that's why.
I mean, you know that, right? I mean, you can't make it being ignorant. It doesn't work.
As a cohesive
no, it doesn't.
Society, and tell me, Derek, it's this: we have become now the third minority in America. We are not the number one minority. We have Asians, we have Hispanics, and then you have us.
No. It's white, black, it's white, Hispanic, and then us.
Whites are still the majority.
White's the majority.
56%. Oh,
and we're two.
We're number three.
We're number two. Look it up.
Asian.
Go ahead. I'm not going to bring.
I know. I mean, I've used this before.
Go ahead. I can finish your statement.
But my point is this: that makes us quite insignificant if we don't know how to use the political system to get things that we really want. Not be relegated to saying that our programs our early lunch and early breakfast and food stamps. That's not our heritage in this country. And that's what I resent the most about how the left has been able to commandeer the doggone conversation, because that's what they see us as. That's why the big thing back in the 80s and 90s, well, we gave you welfare when people were talking about reparations. We gave you welfare. You didn't give me anything. I've never been on welfare a day in my life. So when you're saying this, we, our leaders, like Jesse was talking about yesterday, unemployment is this high, and as much as I don't care for Sean Hannity lit his behind up and said, listen, isn't it the president's place that he's cutting back industry after industry because of EPA regulations, this, that, and other, and trying to raise minimum wages, that you have a whole lot of black unemployment in this country? Isn't that who you need to be talking to? And he said, well, and he couldn't explain anything.
Hey, Derek,
it was ridiculous.
Derek, how do we change it? Because I actually booked you to talk about immigration and the impact on the black community. How do we change it? How do we stop this madness?
Let me go back to what you guys were saying before, and then I'll answer that question. I don't even think that we're the third minority. I think the first minority are gays. Gays have supplanted blacks. So if you look at gays, Latinos, women, we're like fourth or fifth when it comes to minorities and needing to be addressed.
Absolutely.
Influence. That's right.
Yeah, we're dead last on influence.
Right. Now, how do we change it? I think here's the thing, and this is where I think that Republicans and conservatives have really failed not only their platform and the ideology, but the country in general, is that they, again, haven't created messages to go into certain places to say, we understand your frustration because you want this, you want A, B, and C, not only for you, but for your family and for your community. But you go against that by advocating for these types of issues and these types of policies. We haven't gone – there's no need to talk to the NAACP. There's no need to talk to the Urban League or the Congressional Black Caucus. They're not the people that we need to talk to because they're not on the ground. They don't have to deal with the repercussions of the stupid policies that they support. We have to go into the communities and say, listen, we understand your frustration that you're going to be supplanted by illegal immigrants. They're going to take jobs away that don't exist. They're going to complicate economic matters even more for black men who are struggling to find work over the last 5.5 years under the first black president. We understand your frustration, so we're going to go into these areas and say, this is how supporting Democrat policies, you know, have worked for you, whether it's in Chicago, Detroit, all those inner cities that I've labeled off, they've all been run by Democrats for 50 years. So we have to go into those areas and say, this is how these supporting these policies have affected you up to this point. Now if the president decides to go along with amnesty, you already live in an economically disadvantaged area where they've closed schools. Now they're going to have to hire teachers with even less money that speak an Indian dialect of Spanish to educate and influence the people coming into your school system. So now not only are teachers not teaching your children and giving them added attention to where they need to be so they can actually compete with their white and Asian counterparts, now we're going to take even more time away from them to try to educate people who can't speak English at all. So that's how it affects you. If you are on public assistance, we want to not only make sure that you have public assistance because you're probably dependent on it, whether it's through choices, bad choices, or no fault through your own, but we also want to enable you to get off of public assistance, show you how to, you know, gain those job skills that you need so you can go into the get into the economy to provide for yourself. But this is how supporting people who think minimum wage is a good economic policy. This is what happens when you support people who increase regulation. It comes back to haunt you, not rich people, but you.
Derek, will they get it?
As if they're people, but you know,
Derek,
again,
Derek, will they get
you know
it?
What I
will
here's
they get
the thing.
I mean, seriously, I mean, you, what you said is absolutely true. I agree wholeheartedly. But you know, my mom said sometimes you can't prove the fat back is greasy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Listen.
that's what my mama said. And so people, I mean, my mama, you know, because mama said, so she would say, you know, you don't believe fat back is freezing, you don't believe the fire is hot.
Mm-hmm.
Until you get burned with it. And I had to learn a very, very, very expensive lesson early in life. But I learned that you don't have to learn everything by experience, that you could learn something from everyone. And African Americans, I said 20 years ago, 25 years ago with the L.A. riots, I was there. I took pictures. I couldn't believe it. Ferguson is here. Zimmerman was there. I mean, you had Agenda 6, even if they were wrong, it was there. And this comes out of frustration. All this happens, and there's nothing that's changing to make it better. And when you tell people, I mean, I know that I'm a conservative because I believe I want to be independent of the system. I do not want the system to control me. When I get older, I do not want them to tell me what I can do and not do with my money, how many diapers I can have. I do not want to be Julia.
Right.
I do not want to be on the system from birth until death. I do not want to depend upon a Social Security check for my livelihood. I don't want it. And my community at large is, they will not stop this train.
You know, everything you say is right. Everything you say is right. The reason I hold out a bit of optimism is because about 6 weeks ago when the illegal immigration thing was really, you know, stuck full front in the headlines and those videos were coming out of the woman in Houston and in Chicago and, you know, other places, you could see that the frustration, to me, that's perfect because now they're seeing for themselves. It's not somebody saying this is going to happen. It's not like the prophets going to Judah and Israel and say, if you don't change, this is going to happen. 10, 20, 30 years go by, nothing happens, so they don't listen. The prophets have already spoken. Now it's coming to pass, and they're seeing it, and they're terrified. And I think when you have people who see it for themselves, they may be open for changing their mind.
Derek, are you going to stay on with us until the end of the show?
Sure.
Or do you have to go? Well, listen, Jeff is here. If you will continue this conversation, I'm going to take a real quick break. Jeff's going to sit down and finish the show out for me. I'd greatly appreciate it. You're listening to Tracy and Friends here on WSOM AM 600. The number is 347-945-5229, and we'll see you back on the other side of the break. Tomorrow, Sticks and I will be here, and we'll probably be
Let's talk for a moment. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. If you're looking for a doctor to help you with your prenatal needs or help with your decisions or questions about birth control, call 330-746-7007 and talk to Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoney Valley. And read the testimonials at aiwhealth.com.
I could not have had a better experience. Dr. Hill was always attentive to my needs and empathetic when the situation called for that type of sentiment. Dr. Hill's office environment and staff are pleasant and warm. Clearly, a good deal of care has gone into making the visiting experience a good one.
All patients receiving prenatal care get a free designer diaper bag. Dr. Hill at Associates in Women's Health of the Mahoning Valley only has one goal, ensuring your health so you could fully enjoy all of the times of your life. 1350 Fifth Avenue in Youngstown. Call 330-746-7007 and visit aiwhealth.com.
Well, ring-a-ding-ding, the year was 1936, and Leo and Lillian Goodwin were hot to trot for the world to save some big bucks on automotive insurance. So they opened up a little joint called Geico. Geico had the goods for all the dolls and Joes who were keen on swell service and keeping the cabbage.
Flash forward over 75 years, and Geico is still helping customers save money every day.
There's just too little love for what the world needs now. Is love for you, love? No, not just for some.
And we're back once again, Mornings with Tracy and Friends, and we're talking to our guest, Mr. Derek. I forget your last name, so forgive me. Are you still there, sir?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We lost a couple people at first because our lines went down, which is something that happens every now and then, but we have everything back in order now. Go ahead and expound on some things that you'd like to talk about here as we finish up the rest of the day, because we have about 6 or 7 minutes, and then we're going to bring in an unlisted caller as well.
Okay. You know, really what it comes down to is that, you know, I think that right now in our country, I think what people are doing in Ferguson, and again, we've seen it in other cities over the last several years, is still trying to play off of this black-white paradigm. And I think that paradigm is 20th century. Now that we have an influx of legal immigrants from all over the country, the black-white paradigm that was, you know, essential to, I would say, black socioeconomic success in the latter part of the 20th century is no longer relevant. And so we need to change our mentality and our positioning. We can no longer specifically talk about race as if that is the only language that we speak. We have to get more astute in our observations and start speaking about economics and saying, how is illegal immigration going to negatively affect the economies in urban areas, you know, that are going to be disproportionately populated by black people? You know, we need to speak the language of education. How not only is illegal immigration going to negatively affect the education of our children, but how is it supporting a party who doesn't advocate for school choice or the freedom for parents to put their vouchers and put their children in good schools? How is that going to affect our children not only now, but, you know, build a weak foundation for their future? We need to start speaking in these types of terms and moral terms to say, listen, it's no longer okay to, you know, kill two-thirds of our children in the womb and try to kill the rest when they're in their early to late teens.
Right.
These are the
right
types of things that we need to kind of embrace and say, listen, we need to start speaking this type of language, because as we've seen, whether it's illegal immigration, whether it's the president ignoring black folks for the gay and homosexual lobby, for Latinos that are here, so on and so forth, we have put ourselves in a position where we have lost political and cultural capital. And I think the only way to regain that isn't to go beg political leaders. It is to say we are going to take advantage of the very system that our ancestors fought and died for, and which other people are coming from across the world to take advantage of, and empower ourselves to be great again, to regain the moral, the political, the cultural relevancy. Because if not, you know, again, the world is moving on, and it seems that the only people who don't know it are black Americans. So that's what I would say that we need to do.
Well, my friend, now, are you with an organization that is working to change that dynamic and that conversation in America?
Yeah, I am with Project 21, and Project 21
That's right.
is is sponsored. It's a black leadership network of black conservatives and black libertarians, and it's sponsored by the National Center for Public Policy Research. And again, what Project 21 allows us to do is to go out, gives us a platform to be on shows like this to advocate alternative positions, whether they're moral positions, cultural, economic, foreign policy, that counters what many see as a monolithic understanding of black political thought or cultural thought in the country. So we're trying to get the message out through commentaries, through press releases, radio interviews, TV interviews, you know, any form of communication that we can you know, participate in, we're doing to try to get the word out, not only to black Americans, but Americans as a whole, that there is an alternative way of thinking and you should consider it.
I definitely want to get more involved with Project 21, as well as we've had several people on the show that represent the organization and the ideology of that organization, because that's what's going to help. Unlisted caller, you're in there. Okay.
Hello, Alabama. You're in Alabama?
No, you ain't unlisted. What's up, Alabama?
Ain't nothing. I just called in. I'm on my lunch break. I was just trying to see what your guest meant by empowerment. Could he be more specific?
Sure. So, for example, you know, we know that black students, when they graduate high school, they're graduating at the level of a white eighth grade graduate. So empowering ourselves would be taking more time educating our children ourselves. So whether it's, you know, what they need in the schoolhouse, there's public libraries all over the place in which we can take our children in there to learn how to read, to learn how to do arithmetic, learn how to write. You see, all in these impoverished communities, who's in the libraries on the weekends and after school? Asians. And that's why they perform so well. So we can empower ourselves through education. We can also empower ourselves economically by saying, you know what, there's certain jobs that we may not like to do, but we have to do them, because if we don't get into the economy, there's no way we can ascend up the economic ladder to make more money, to have more promotions, to take care of ourselves and our family. But not only that, when we get into the workforce, then we go and try to find some of these young men and women to mentor, because chances are the majority of them don't have fathers. And if we don't have fathers teaching their children the right way to go, you're going to see chaos in the streets. So we need to not only get into the economy, but also mentor other people to say, this is how you do it. The black market may look good, the fancy cars and that type of thing, but it always ends up bad. So we need to empower ourselves in that type of way. And I think as a third way, primarily, is the church has to kind of regain its footing in the community. You know, we need to go out and again, reestablish moral principles that it's okay to not engage in criminal activity, that to say, listen, we are created in the image of God, and with that reality comes a certain obligation to take care of ourselves as well as our brother. You know, we have to go and embrace that type of thing as a foundation, so that when we go out into the greater world, we can demonstrate to people that, yes, we are self-sufficient, we're dignified, we're noble, and we're capable of taking care of ourselves.
Well, Derek, I want to thank you for being here with us today. We're out of time here. We're about to get interrupted by our music. So we're going to have to go. We will expect to see you again, my friend, and we'll have this conversation one more time and see what we can come up with. We have callers online that can stay on. You can discuss this for a little while. And I'm going to see whether you're there. Mornings with Tracy and Friends, Jeff in the air chair. Freshly back from meeting with Alabama down in Atlanta, Georgia. What's good? I had a great time down there, my friend, and we're getting ready to get up out of here. So we'll see you back on the other side of everything. Tomorrow, Tracy and Sticks will be here. See ya.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Dave Packard. Nightly violence.
Who on the line? There's nobody.